The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
What is that? Someone made a tape of something dying or something.
Turn that crap off! What's going on?
I want this music out of my head.
Hey, turn that off! Turn that off right now!
PFW in Progress with Red Kirsch.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. You know, I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine. If you ain't first, you're last.
Paul Perillo.
Shut up in here. I'm trying to sleep. One of you turds is about to get smacked in the mouth.
Hey, stop yelling at me, okay?
And Andy. And Andy?
Hey, Ryder! Jarvis!
Please be 18.
Andy Hart.
We were shellbacks together, Andy! You got payback coming!
Eric Scalavino.
Remember that time we got kicked out of biology for playing with Matchbox cars?
Yeah!
Who's retarded now?
For now, anyway.
My husband Gregory and I wish only for that which every other couple wishes for. To tame Komodo dragons in Sri Lanka.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Hakuna Matata, bitches.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. Win and you're in. That's what it's all about this week. The AFC Championship, the Baltimore Ravens are coming, and I'll bet you this is something that they figure is the answer to their prayers. I figure that they think that this is their destiny, to come back to the place where they lost, had that heartbreaking loss, and, you know, so they probably think that, you know, this was meant to be for them. Don't you think, Paul?
Yeah, I think they have an air of that about them.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think they're probably feeling pretty good, despite the two games, especially defensively. They've been on the field for a lot of plays, 87 snaps in each game, played deep into overtime, got into double overtime even. So, yeah, right. I think they're probably feeling a little bit of that.
Despite losing that first game against the Patriots, they probably feel confident coming in.
there's no question.
Right.
Why wouldn't you? Either team should feel very good about this game.
WebRadio@Patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. We're here until 2 o'clock talking Patriots. It's surreal that, you know, this team is once again in the AFC Championship. It really is.
It's a little strange. We were talking about this upstairs with some of the people around the stadium, and it was just kind of quiet, like looking around. And like, remember when, like, oh my God, it's the AFC title game this week? It just seems like it's, you know,
this is
what we do, AFC title games.
It wasn't always a foregone conclusion. You didn't always have a double bye, as Dan Shaughnessy said, to get there.
But I also think here in this stadium, not that, you know, people are complacent, but people realize, okay, we won. Now this is what I got to do. You know, they know the job ahead of them, whereas a lot of places where, you know, they haven't won in a long time or, you know, or at all, everyone's scrambling. You know,
well, because, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And from top to bottom, from, you know, in the stadium, low-level people, even us, you know, previews, whatever we have to do, all the way up through football operations. You know,
right.
This has been there, done that. They have the experience of this whole home game or road game. You know, everything was ready or is going to be ready for this weekend. It's a benefit. It's one of those things where Bill says you can never measure experience on the field. I definitely think you can measure it off the field, and I think there's value to it. I think as an organization, you perform better knowing. It's like building a house. You know, everybody says, I'd like to build a house twice and learn from everything when I built my first house or whatever. Well, the Super Bowl thing, we've been through that, and I think there's a benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to Sunday. I guess the prognosticators were right. I mean, in terms of the spread and the ease at which the Patriots were going to beat the Texans, it wasn't as easy as the first game. But I felt pretty good throughout. I mean, there were a couple of moments, you know, getting down to 17-13. I thought that was more mismanagement by the Patriots than anything else, and getting the ball first in the second half made me feel better about that. But overall, you just felt like, okay, there's nothing that the Texans are doing that's going to give the Patriots trouble throughout.
Paul and I were talking about that upstairs. It was always a Patriots victory from the get-go. I mean, it never felt like –
And I think Rod had a better game the first game than this game.
Who did?
What? I think he was pretty active both games.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty similar.
But to me, I joked with Paul. No one followed him. You know, whether this whole spit thing is true or not, I think he intended on leading his team in this game. And we talked about it pregame. I think he needed to. I think he's the, you know, his coach doesn't do it. His quarterback doesn't do it. He's the guy. He's the superstar. He's the energy, everything. And I think he tried to. It just didn't happen. And I likened it to, you know, when Frank the Tank's going streaking and no one follows him.
Right.
Watt was ready to lead.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure anybody was ready to follow. And it led to a game where I don't even – it wasn't the Patriots why I thought the game was never in doubt. It was the Texans.
Right.
I never felt they were ready to win this game.
They weren't doing anything.
Right.
Yeah. Schaub wasn't doing anything. Andre Johnson was catching passes, but Tlaib kind of had him.
Kept him in
he
front.
Was right there.
No, that was clearly their game plan. We'll let Tlaib – I mean, Johnson catch the ball.
Right.
We'll tackle, keep him in front. I don't think it's a mistake that I think Tlaib, McCourty, and Dennard were like your three highest tacklers. I mean, I think that was their game plan. They probably expected, like we did, they're going to try to make some hay through the air. They know they're going to have to throw the ball, and we're just going to tackle them, and they won't do enough to beat us.
You know, and Brady looked confident, you know, timing his passes well. You know, there was some pressure, but he was getting rid of the ball on time for the most part. You know, obviously it's bittersweet that Gronk got hurt early. That
more kinda, bitter than sweet.
Yeah, that well, the whole game you won, but he, you know.
I know, but now you're going into AFC title game now, and then
no,
maybe a Super Bowl saying, we don't have Gronk again.
Yeah, and
that's why you need a running game, which I said all year.
But they did adjust, you know, well without him. And Ridley ran well. So, I mean, yeah, again, I just felt pretty good throughout the whole game.
The Shane Vereen breakout game.
Yeah, the only difference to me, you said it was a little more difficult, and you can't account for something like this, but the kickoff returns.
Right.
To me, were the only thing that kept this game from being any different than the last game. Because if you ask me, Houston would have been under 10 without the kickoff returns.
Well, that's
in
a
that
good
game.
Point, Paul. I mean, three times they were set up with such good field position, you know, probably would not, you know, cut in half the points they got as a result of it.
And I'm not eliminating that as part of the game, but it's not something you necessarily account for when you're looking at, you know,
especially with this team, they hadn't had the problem.
Yeah, I had made the comment to you guys last week, what has changed since the last game to lead you to believe that it's going to unfold? And I think they threw the ball very similar as they did last game. I thought they had guys open the last game, and I thought he had guys open this game. But the quarterback doesn't make any plays. I'll give him a little bit of a pass for the opening kickoff. I thought he put the ball right to James Casey, and he went right through his hands. But he threw a lot of bad passes to guys that were open in that game. And he doesn't get – I don't think he has the ability to get the ball downfield at all. And Andy made the comment that, you know, there's no surprise on, to the Patriots to have all their defensive backs leading in tackles because I think they just said, he can't throw it over our heads. We're just going to let him catch him and tackle him.
Yep.
And I think that's what they did all day because Schaub can't get the ball past them.
For the rest of the weekend, I heard someone or some people say that it was the best weekend of NFL football ever. Not sure if that's true, but there were some pretty good games.
Yeah, it was very good.
In fact, our game was the only one that was kind of like, eh. But
and viewing even, experience
and
was
even that
as
was 17-13 at the half.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you. It felt like it was 27-13 at the half.
Right.
But in reality, it was a four-point game at halftime.
Yeah, I guess the Green Bay game was a little bit anticlimactic. I figured the Packers would put up a little bit more of a fight.
Well, that was another one that was 24-24 going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, so even that game, you know, give San Francisco credit for laying the hammer down.
But right.
That was a good game for a long time.
But that Denver-Ravens game. Unbelievable. How any safety, I don't care who you are, can have that happen at the end of the game in such a critical moment. It was just shocking.
I think it might be singularly the worst defensive play that I can ever remember. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm not trying
to be the
hyperbolic. I think that might be the single worst defensive play I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And
if not for that, the Patriots are going to Denver,
you know,
instead
Fred,
of hosting
Manning,
this game.
Brady.
There's times when you get fooled and someone gets left uncovered or whatever, you know, and that they shouldn't happen, but that happens. This is a play that they were fully prepared for,
right?
And for some reason that only he'll know, he ran over and decided to jump 5 yards short of where the ball was. And really, I don't even think he came close to hitting the ball.
No, he didn't. Just tackle the guy. That's all you have to do.
Well, no, he needed to break up the play.
Yeah.
He didn't need to let him catch it and tackle him because then they would have a chance to win.
Yeah.
Or a tie.
Right.
He blew it. That's all there is to it. He blew it. They say, like, one guy doesn't lose a game.
One guy lost the game. And to his credit, he said it. And I felt bad for him. I mean, he was crying and he put it all on his shoulders. It was one guy lost the game, and he did. And then, you know, of course, you got all happy because your boy unraveled in overtime.
Yeah.
Peyton.
Well, I mean, I'm not...
Terrible, terrible.
I'm not the anti-Peyton guy I used to be a long time ago. Okay. I respect him, and...
He isn't. He's matured a little.
No, right? I'll give him that because you said I'm not the anti-Peyton guy that I used to
right.
be, and that's
he's grown.
Yeah,
yeah. There's some truth
and I don't
that.
Think that he lost him the game. It was a bad throw, but he had a good. He got him there. I mean, he was playing pretty well up to that point. So,
oh yeah,
you know,
I thought he played a solid game, but you can't make that play in overtime.
Nope.
You can't. That's a terrible, terrible decision and throw.
Yeah.
Both. That was two times. A lot of times you just make a bad throw. Or, well, you try to force it in to get the flat. That was both. That was a bad mental play throwing across your body and a bad physical throw. Because if he had thrown it across his body properly, he would have gotten it there.
Yep.
He just didn't throw it right.
And then the other game on Sunday, I mean, Atlanta and the Seahawks, another crazy game. I mean, you know, Atlanta was dead. And then two passes and they're right back in there ready to kick that field goal. And then even how that transpired was kind of kooky
yep.
with the practice and then Carroll calling the timeout to ice him and then he gets another chance. That was just a nutty game. And you thought, well, there go the Falcons again, going to blow another playoff game. But this time they got the win. Just an amazing game.
I feel a little bit about the Falcons like I felt last week about the Texans. I'm not sure the monkey's totally off your back. I think the monkey had one leg on your back and one leg off and still
yeah.
does.
Well, they were close. You know, 27-7, they were looking
right,
good.
Right, that's
you know?
Fine. That's monkey off back.
That's getting the monkey
but
off
the monkey
your back.
Was jumping, and he said, you know what, I'm going to stay on
yeah,
a little longer.
Let's see how they handle this.
Yeah, I'm not buying the monkeys off their back.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but it's one of those, you know how I get really frustrated with the whole, you know, you let the scoreboard be your total basis for all analysis, and they won the game. Mike Smith just lost. Just absolutely lost in the last quarter of that game. And watching him call timeout with 13 seconds left, I'm just wondering to myself, what are these guys, I mean, do they have any formal training?
Right.
You know, to use the Eric thing.
Right.
I mean, has Mike Smith ever been in a late game hurry up situation before? He's running down the side. We were talking about when we were on the air. Andy and I were doing great play by play. Andy over my shoulder. Me over his. He's running down the sideline like he had no... Calm down.
Yeah.
Everybody calm down. There's 13 seconds left. We can let it go down to 4 and call timeout.
Right.
And then make the field goal the last play of the game. And then, I don't know what he told his kicker, but I'll tell you, for all the world, to me, it looked like he onside kicked it.
Yeah, he claimed
yeah.
that they missed. It was supposed to be a squib that he...
He
I don't
ran
know how.
After it awfully hard for a squib kick.
I don't know how...
I have no formal artistic...
I don't even know why you would squib kick, Fred. In
yeah.
a dome, I don't know why you would squib kick.
Yeah.
Drill it through the end zone and make them start at the 20. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea what they were doing.
Well, they asked Bill Belichick about that, you know, in any kind of... that game.
And he said that he touched on it yesterday? He already answered it yesterday?
No, he actually had a good explanation.
He said, I just got off the field.
He goes, it really depends on the situation. If you see that they've got all their skill players on the field... Then you boom it so that it puts them all out of the play. You know, if you're thinking of squib kicking, even if you were thinking of squib, if you see all the skill guys there, you might just, you know, think about kicking it long just so they're out of the play and they can't run the cow play, you know, with the laterals and all that stuff. You know, so he said it really depends on who's on the field and whether or not you would call for the squib
kick. Did Seattle have their hands team on the field?
Wait a minute. He's talking about the Seattle thing?
No, he said he didn't see that play.
Oh.
But he said in general, like, whether or not you
call... Because why would their hands people not be on the field?
Right.
Ever.
I just said, he was saying in general, not that play. But when do you call a squib? When do you kick it long in a situation like that? And he says, sometimes when you see all the hands guys on the field, you decide not to squib it and kick it over their head so they can't do a cow play.
Yeah, I didn't see the press conference that you were talking about, but I have a feeling...
This was EEI.
I have a feeling he's answering based on Gary Kubiak's decision to kick the ball deep when all the hands people... When on a kickoff would the hands people not be on the field?
He specifically said, I have no idea.
Like, did Seattle have their hands team on the field? I don't know that I would have.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God. You guys... He specifically said, I didn't see the play, so I can't answer to that.
So my answer to you is, we're talking about two 180
degree
opposites.
Exactly. He said, in general, when just talking about squib kicks and when to do it and when not to do it, had nothing to do with the play. He didn't see it. He said he didn't see it. He said he can't speak to it.
Okay, so why we? I mean, why do we bring it up?
I just thought it was interesting. Oh my God!
I'm still a little confused. I don't understand then.
Since it's not really relevant to anything, why don't we just move on?
I know.
Okay.
All I
said, I don't understand.
It was interesting because they asked him about it, and he went into the thing about when and when not to do squib. It had nothing to do with that game. But
he used it as an opportunity to go another 3 minutes without talking about Gronkowski. Well, is what he used it for.
Maybe, but
I don't understand. That's all.
Okay. Well, sorry.
I was looking for a little more information, I guess.
He didn't see the game, so he couldn't speak to it. Web radio at Patriots.com, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket hotline. So how do you feel about this game coming up?
I assume you're talking about victory.
Well, you know,
I feel great about the game. I feel like I'm going to get a good AFC title game here at Gillette Stadium.
I heard right now that the spread came out like at 9 and 10, and it's creeping up.
I was stunned by that.
Me too.
Paul Kenyon asked me of the Providence Journal at the elevator coming back from the locker room, so what do you think? I said, 6-ish, 5.5, Patriots by 5.5
or
6.
Okay.
He actually said, I was thinking 4, 4.5.
Yeah.
And then I saw the real number came out. I think it started at 9.5 and has crept up. I don't get it.
So basically what they're telling you is they thought that Baltimore has the same chance as Houston.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's absurd.
I do too, but the one thing I will say is they might be looking at that Baltimore defense and saying they can't stop Brady, even without Gronkowski. But I think what they're not taking into consideration is Flacco. He's playing a lot better.
But what about the Ravens in the first game?
If that's what you're saying, then the Texans should have been underdogs by 16.5. Because whatever you think that the Baltimore defense can't do, was true of the Texans, and they didn't have a chance offensively to keep up.
Yeah, I don't get
Baltimore does.
Right.
So even if you think that Baltimore can't stop them defensively, which I disagree with, but even if you think that that's the same, you couldn't possibly have thought Houston's defense had a better chance than Baltimore's based on what just happened 5 weeks earlier.
I don't see any logic in it, so I don't know where it came from, the number. But they're good. I mean, they're usually pretty close and pretty right. So I would take that as a good thing if you're a Patriots fan, that Vegas thinks you're a heavy favorite.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought was, okay, the Patriots can score points on Baltimore. But I'm worried about Baltimore's offense. I really am. I mean, look at how, you know, unafraid they are about throwing that ball downfield. I mean, the Patriots are going to be tested here. And that's going to open up things underneath for Ray Rice, and he's another guy they have to worry about. And so this could be a real barn burner.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a very interesting game that I think is going to live up to what has become the series trend of dogfight. Fourth quarter, this game is very much in question. You know, it might not go to the last play like the last couple have, but the last 15 minutes, the last 12 minutes, 10, somewhere in there, the game is going to be won and lost. And to me, that's not a 9.5-point game. I feel like even if the Patriots end up winning by 9.5 points,
it won't be like that.
They weren't right. Doesn't mean they were right.
It won't be like Sunday's game.
Right. I will not be declaring it over in the first quarter. Unless they go up 28.
If it ends up the Patriots, you know, end up covering, I could see a scenario that, you know, the Patriots have, you know, a 6-point lead and the Ravens are driving at the end and you know, some turnover happens and, you know, they end up covering or something like that. I agree with Andy. I don't see this game being out of control before the fourth quarter. I think it's going to go to the wire.
Yeah. So, but that's what they're saying. So it's interesting. You know, Flacco, just look at him. He is playing better than he has. He's
especially against us.
Certainly better than the first half. When you look at playoff games early and then late, he's done much better lately. He's not a mobile quarterback, so that is something that the Patriots don't have to necessarily worry about. But, you know, he's got, you know, these guys are really stepping up as wide receivers, and I think that's a better facet of their game than they've ever had, you know.
Well, they have a third one, I think, in Jacoby Jones that factors in. I think the tight ends are more confident, you know, in Pitta especially. But Dixon can make some plays too. Yeah. But Dennis Pitta has emerged as a pretty good target. And one thing, and Andy and I wrote about this for the preview, I think their big Achilles heel on offense all year long has been pass protection, the offensive line. And I don't know if it's because of this, or if it's just circumstantial, but the changes that they made in the offensive line appear to have worked. Bryant McKinney is now the starting left tackle. They moved Michael Orr from the left side to the right side, and they moved rookie Kelechi Assemelie. I always pronounce his name wrong. Assemelie.
I just don't say it.
From right tackle to left guard to replace Ja Reed, who was placed on injury reserve. That group has been together for the two playoff games. I think they played a little bit against Cincinnati as well, but they played the two playoff games, and Flacco has really been under very little pressure and was really impressive, I thought, Saturday with Doomerville and Miller. A lot of passing situations, they weren't getting anywhere near him. And yeah. There was one of the highlights they keep showing from Flacco and one of the bombs to Torrey Smith. It was like 7-on-7 in practice. Like he's standing there with a completely clean pocket, steps in, throws, and even had a chance to sort of follow through. I mean, you never see NFL quarterbacks be able to throw
right.
that cleanly. So that's an X factor for them. If he gets time, because that to me is the only time Joe Flacco doesn't look like a good quarterback, is when he's flustered. I think he gets affected more than most good quarterbacks by pressure, not by pass rush pressure.
Right.
So if you don't get any of that on him, I think he becomes a tough guy to deal with.
Yeah. San Francisco, Atlanta. Atlanta gets a chance to host these guys. Does that make much of a difference? Because I see San Francisco as the team to beat
mm-hmm.
right now.
I agree.
I think all around they're playing better than any of the other three teams.
Well, their offense has really come on. Now they have a big play offense. They got what they wanted out of this Kaepernick, or Kaepernick as you like to say, swap. And he's making, what do you have, 161 or whatever yards rushing, record for yards rushing, 181.
Yeah.
Big plays. Yeah, they're making plays all over the field. And if Justin Smith is on the field, that defense is legit.
The most impressive thing to me was that he threw a pick six early, you know. And
oh, he doesn't lack for confidence.
He overcame that.
He's a little bit of a punk.
Imagine what Matt
for the
Schaub,
good, I mean.
Imagine what Matt Schaub would have done if he threw a pick six early.
Matt Schaub would have done that if he threw a touchdown. An 80-yard touchdown, he would have been like, oh, now I'm set up. Next one's going to be a pick because now I wasted my touch. I mean,
I'll tell you, that game really turned to, I think Green Bay had a 14-7 lead and forced a punt. And our buddy, Andy, do you remember our buddy Jeremy Ross with a bad muff punt inside the 10 for the Packers? He was in there for Randall Cobb because they haven't liked what Cobb has been doing. And our buddy Jeremy Ross, who was, I think, an intriguing return guy in camp here with the Patriots, he coughed it up, and that was a big play in that game.
Yes.
They ended up tying the game, and then they were able to take the lead, I think, before halftime. That was a huge play.
Well, you know, special teams, and obviously special teams did not look good for the Patriots in terms of coverage this game. Is this a fluke? Is this correctable? Or did you see something that was a flaw that not necessarily wasn't a one-game thing?
I don't know what the flaw was. I mean, clearly they were losing containment. I mean, I think it seemed every time that Manning cut up in, you know, you go up straight for about 20 yards, then you look to break it off one way or the other. And virtually every one of his returns, he had plenty of room. So someone was not doing what they were supposed to do. I don't know if that was a flaw in the design of the coverage or anything. But for the most part, the coverage has been pretty good, but there have been some glaring breakdowns, like the one against San Francisco that allowed LaMichael James to set up the game-winning touchdown. So there have been some periods, I think, in kick-out punt coverage has been phenomenal from start to finish all season long. But kick coverage, a little shaky from time to time.
All right, webradio at patriots.com.
Did you see anything, Andy, being a former special teams demon yourself?
No.
Just looked like they were losing containment for whatever reason. I don't know if it was because of design or getting blocked, or maybe they were blocking in the back and not calling it for whatever reason.
Who
I
knows?
Don't know.
They had a bad day. I just posted Take Tuesday on patriots.com, where we kind of look back at a small play or something that kind of flew under the radar. And this week's was, I don't know if you remember, Fred, Houston lined up to punt midway through the second quarter, and the Patriots left their left gunner uncovered. They
Patriots
had 10 guys
had
on the field.
Timeout, right.
Patriots called timeout, but even worse than that, I don't think Houston saw it and or were planning to do anything about it. Mm. If right before the timeout, they snapped the ball, and the punter was taking his strides to just kick it off. It's not like he was getting ready to step up and just throw a quick pass, because they were at the Patriots 43. He's going to get 30 yards, 20 yards if they complete the pass. And if he can beat Welker, if he cuts it back, it's a touchdown. You tie the game at 10 there. Who knows? Totally different ball game. And I just think
and I would have just gone for it anyway because they were on the Patriots' side of the field.
And a little something that was a little bit even more under the radar is Marquise Cole actually ran on the field late to cover the right gunner. They came out with neither gunner covered.
Jeez.
And they got away with it, but maybe it was just a bad day for the special teams in general. Maybe they just, yeah. I don't know, had their heads up their poo-poos or whatever. But and luckily they played a team that had its head up its poo-poo because I don't understand how a guy could, literally the guy was, what, 7 yards from Gary Kubiak and the rest of the bench? Nothing? You don't have a call?
Right.
You don't have a call for, you know, to go
right.
automatically
take
to a fake
of
punt?
That. Right.
Because you know what? Even if you, if, maybe Jones can't throw. I don't know. Maybe he's left-handed, so he can't throw that way. He can't turn all the way and throw. I think if you run that way, you're going to get the first down and more because you now have an advantage. You have a blocker there who can run a crackback block. You're probably going to get the corner and go down the sideline. So I find it absolutely unfathomable that they couldn't take advantage of that, and that's why they suck.
It was really striking is how many people thought that the Houston Texans had the talent to give the Patriots a game but not the mental fortitude and to play a game where they displayed so little mental fortitude.
Right to the
point
where
Wouldn't you think that, like, listen, I'm Gary Kubiak, and I don't care. I might lose this game, but I ain't leaving any bullets in the holster.
Well, he's got a lot of bullets in the holster.
Yeah, he left them all in the holster.
I was going to say, he actually left the holster at home in Houston, you know, and didn't even bring it.
A couple of punts, and I thought early in the game they had opportunities. You know, they get the field goal gifted to them by the kickoff return. And then they stopped the Patriots twice. The first two possessions, the Patriots did not move the ball.
Right.
Once three and out, then once I think they got one first down, and then three and out. You had opportunities that where you sort of inch the ball around midfield. Ah, we'll just punt. We'll play it safe. You know,
right.
I think that was a chance. Make a play, and you could take a stranglehold on the game early, and at the very least, you're going to make the Patriots take time off the clock getting back because you knew you weren't going to hold the Patriots down all day. But they needed the Texans' defense needed the Texans' offense to play some defense for them. They needed them to score points and take some time off the clock, and they couldn't do it.
Texans defense also needs somebody to tell them that sometimes the Patriots
run
go
no
fast.
Huddle. Yeah.
They come to the line, they snap, you know, which also incited Brendan Ayabandejo's comments. But, you know, again, they were caught off guard by that. How? How do you get caught off guard by that in two games in a 6 week span?
Especially inside the 10
yard
line.
And Wade Phillips is supposed to be like this, okay, you suck as a head coach, but you're, you know, a great defensive coordinator. Not great.
I thought it was particularly inexcusable on the two short touchdowns.
Yeah.
Well, the Patriots continue to expose teams.
They do.
508.
I agree.
Absolutely.
508-298-0398.
That seemed like you wanted to fight on that, but that's the truth.
No, that's...
That's one of the rare times where you speak...
I never want to fight. I just make statements.
But when I actually understand what your point
I'm on full board.
I'm with you.
508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's go to the phones. Andre's in San Diego. Hey, Andre.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Great.
What's up, Andre?
Not much, man. I just wanted to talk about the, I don't want to say transformation of McCourty, but from last year, how hard you guys dogged him, justifiably so, he's almost turning into that Patriot that's doing all the little things that go overlooked in a stat book, but he's there, he's dependable. I mean, that play he made, that set the defense up to make a play in the game that almost, it was a blessing that play happened. It made us, showed the Texans that they were in for a long game. And I'm almost thankful that play happened, actually.
It was one of the biggest plays in the game. You know, the players said that, Belichick said that, you know, we sort of said that when they ended up kicking the field goal that, you know, that's a big play against the Texans. You had the chance there to jump on top, get momentum, and you couldn't do it.
It's almost like a punch in the gut to the Texans because you're so close, and instead of getting that seven, the defense actually holds you to three.
Yep.
It was a shift of momentum back to the Patriots.
Yeah, most definitely. And, Andy, you were right. You said that it was going to come down to Schaub, and I was thinking about you exactly when he threw that pick to Nico. You called it. I thought he had a pretty good game up until that point, and even a little after. He made some good passes. But as you said, he was going to do that, and it sure enough happened.
It's because he's a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, I thought he was terrible in the game.
See, I think he's a pretty good quarterback. I think he's
terrible.
One of those guys that you can he'll make regular season numbers, and you'll look at the end of the game, and you'll say, well, he's not that bad. And I think that's the problem that all these teams get stuck in.
I thought he consistently.
But how am I going to replace him? Like, who's going to get me to the postseason?
Right.
Or I could be one of these teams looking for a coach
if
right
I was
now.
Houston, I wouldn't be looking to replace him.
No, but to me, they're all the same. Tony Romo. good enough to be your starting quarterback, not good enough to be your starting quarterback and take you where you want to go.
Right. Unless I had an opportunity to draft somebody high in the draft, I would not be looking to replace Romo or Schaub. I think you could do a lot worse than those guys. But the reason I thought he was awful in the game, as Andy breaks his headphones, is because I thought he missed open guys, one. Two, I thought he was escaping wide open, wide, clean pockets for no reason and shortening his field. And then when he was doing so, while still not under pressure, instead of looking to make a play off of that, he's throwing the ball into the ground.
Right.
You know, third down plays, you know, third and five, he's rolling out with nobody near him. Either run or try to make a play. Don't just throw the ball at someone's feet when you're not being pressured.
Right.
I thought he just played an awful game. I really did.
Yeah.
All right, Andre. Thanks for the call. Melvin's in Tennessee. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Let's go. Bring a little more energy. Your team's in the AFC title game.
Now, what's this thing you were tweeting? You said you took a picture of the comments on the blog.
Yeah, I got a big long one.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Lucky girlfriend.
Go,
Mrs.
Ahead.
Melvin, very happy.
But I had some picture of this. The first one was Fred saying that the Ravens took the ball to the 28-yard line. I thought it was pretty funny that he obviously meant that the Texans did.
Oh, right, at the end of the game, yes.
Yeah, right at the end of the game. I know somebody said that, oh, our defense looks so awful right now, right after the field goal and maybe three or four straight punts, forced punts, which I thought they did really good. Another one that was funny was right when they showed Gronkowski on the screen going to the locker room. Somebody asked Fred, was Gronkowski done for the rest of the game and for the rest of the season? I guess they were thinking that Fred was physically going to go down there and x-ray himself and come back up for a shot.
Well, after you,
so it was a lot,
after you sent that tweet, Melvin, I went back and there's a way in this thing that I used to do the blog to actually download all the comments, not just the one that was published. There were like over 12,000 comments that were sent in. And so I started looking through them to see, I wonder if there were any funny ones that didn't get to be published. I just couldn't get through them. Like I said, there were over 12,000 of them that came in.
It was. I remember that one week somebody asked you, was your real name Fred?
Right.
I was like, what is
that? Right. I said, why would I have a fake name?
Yeah, that
Fred?
Was your – you came and told us that. And
right.
You don't like Fred, do you? You really don't.
I think it's – I've always thought it was like the guy next door's name, you know?
But it's fine.
My next-door neighbor, one of my next-door neighbors was Fred.
See? I told you.
Freddie Nigro.
But it's a fine name. Like,
but it's not like Jake Steele.
It's not like Jake Steele.
That's a ridiculous name. That's a porn star name.
No, it isn't. Somebody has a name, Jake Steele, in
this world. And he does porn.
No, he doesn't.
Yes.
I'm not talking about porn. I'm talking about he was. That's his birth name. He
drives a Subaru.
Yeah. I got a quick question, though, for you. But did it, as far as the kicking and stuff goes, I thought the special teams, especially with the Denver game, really kept them in the game. I guess Baltimore had bad coverage, and, of course, we did, too. So the special teams were going to be and the Green Bay game, they muffed the punt, actually. But does the kicker sometimes, as far as our kicker goes, can he just kick the ball out of the end zone every time, or do they set up plays? Like, because obviously after that first kick-up, I would just told him to, you know, kick it out. I know the wind could affect it, but aren't there plays where they just tell him to kick it out of bounds? Or
no.
Or,
he can't kick it through every time he wants to, because he would if he could.
He doesn't have the power
but he can't,
to,
so he don't.
No. You got to hit it just right to boom it out of
now,
the end
zone. Now, it's easier like in Denver. There, you have a better chance of that. But, yeah, I mean, and we talked about the wind. Paul and I were wondering if there was any kind of wind, and I asked Mesko, and he said it was sneaky. There was a sneaky wind out there. He said if you hit it well, you were fine. It's not like every bad kick was just because of the wind, but it's not like being in a dome or Denver where there's a high chance you can get it through the end zone. It's if he could, he would. I mean, that's the best play. If he could do it 100% of the time, you would see him do it 100% of the time.
Yeah, I've never been a kicker, so it's just like everything else, just getting the field and kicking out. Because, you know, the punter did well. I thought he did well. I just didn't.
Oh, yeah, he had a couple kicks over 60. He averaged, like, just under 60 a kick, and, yeah, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, even him, coming the other way when he said the sneaky win, that was the one they had the long roll for the 64-yard.
The Romanian roll.
That was a really short punt, the one coming back toward the closed end.
Well, he could have said the wind was an issue, and he said no. If you hit the ball squarely, it went where you wanted it to.
All right, Melvin, thanks for the call. Let's go to Chris with a TIN. Hey, Christian.
No weapon. Oh, my God. I can't believe we're back in this position with this team again.
Oh, well, here we go.
Where else would you rather be?
No way. I get ready for World War III. I can't wait. Is
That's
it Sunday
right.
yet?
Christian, I've declared my goal for this weekend.
What is it?
Is to talk to Ray Lewis and have him say, it doesn't matter, Paul. And if he says Paul, I'm retiring. That's
Paul,
it.
Paul's going to wear one of those.
I'm
going to
wear a name tag.
Yeah, just tell him you're Paul from the Corinthians, and then he'll mention your name.
If he says Paul at the end of one of those sentences, that'll be the cap to my career. That's it.
Well, I hope it happens for you. I'll tell you. If Ray Lewis told me that I could run head on and beat a tractor trailer, I'd do it.
You know what he should do? Remember when? Was it Ocho Cinco or there was one of them had this thing where you could call it and they would like leave messages for your friends or something. He should do that kind of stuff.
The Richard Seymour fan hotline?
No, there was one where you could actually
get up out of bed.
Yeah,
time to go to work.
Yeah, he should do those types of things. There should be like a Ray Lewis app.
Eat your vegetables.
It's not time to sleep, Sal.
Ray, can we do that? Can we just take all his because he's been mic'd up. He has said every word known to man. And if we put it all together, make our own Ray Lewis app.
Make sure you clean behind your ears.
Exactly.
I bet you once he gets to ESPN, he might have something like that.
Oh, yeah.
He will.
You never
yeah.
know.
Reverend Ray.
Retirement party, I saw one fan wanted our headline
oh, yeah.
to be
yeah.
this
yeah,
week.
That's going
retirement
around. Yep.
Party.
I've got a couple of days that. To talk about this game, and obviously I can't wait, but I wanted to go back and talk about sort of how the Ravens got here. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on Denver and whether you put that loss, aside from the horrific defensive plays, if you put that loss when they had 31 seconds left, do you put that on Fox or do you put that on Manning?
Fox.
Fox to me. On that particular one, it's Fox. But to me, the much more egregious play was the one that allowed them to be in that situation.
And you know, here's the thing, you know, because going into this game, a lot of people said, oh, Broncos haven't beat anybody good. Look, for all intents and purposes, they had beaten the Ravens.
They had just beaten the Ravens a lot worse than that 3 weeks earlier.
Right. They had beaten the Ravens in a big game. You know, so it was just one of those things, you know, inexcusable, unexplainable.
I put it on Fox, though, Christian, to not go for it. And listen, Peyton took the blame on the 3rd and 7 on their last offense. Yeah, when he audibled out of a pass, evidently, for a run play. Uh-huh. And he said, that's all on me. That was my fault. I liked the look that and ended up not being what I thought. That's on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see any reason why he wouldn't have said the same thing if it was his choice to kneel on the ball at the end of the game. And Fox said it was his.
Yeah, Fox said that based on the play, you know, what had just happened, he didn't feel his team was ready to go for the throat.
You know, Manning took a lot of blame for the game.
Yeah.
So I don't see why he wouldn't have taken blame for sitting on the ball at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. I know there were a lot of people that talked about it, how, you know, he's sort of that when he's the one of the two seed. You know, he's usually like one and done.
Yeah,
and,
eight times.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. That's an amazing stat in itself. And you know, I put it on Fox. I mean, what else did you get this guy for? This is what you needed. You needed that, and you needed a guy to get you over the hump. And you had a chance. And you see Sunday
right.
in Atlanta, and there's the perfect example: a franchise quarterback that can make plays. That's what they needed, and he didn't use it.
Oh, but let's get one thing straight, though, with Atlanta.
Yep.
Had they been in a tie game, they'd have been playing overtime because they would not have done that.
You think Mike Smith wouldn't have done
no
that?
No chance. No chance.
Because I can see that, yeah.
No chance would they have gone for it if they didn't have – they were losing. There's a difference.
Yeah, there is a difference, yep. You're right.
Because, well, I mean, based on the way he coached the rest of that fourth quarter, you think he was going to be aggressive enough to go for it if it was a tie game? No way.
It's nice to know I'm not the only one alone, my friends and I, when he's flying down the sideline, timeout, and we're going, what are you doing?
Yeah. Can you imagine Bill just, like, being completely out of control?
Right.
And I'm not saying Bill does everything right, because I thought that he mishandled the end of the first half badly. But he's not mishandling it because he's not prepared.
Right.
Because he doesn't know what to do.
Right.
He made a mistake.
Yep.
Do you know, there's a difference.
There is a difference.
You know,
yep.
I just, watching him run around, I was, like, embarrassed for him.
It was like a
high school coach.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, Christian, thanks for calling. Let's go to Virginia. Olivier's on the phone. Hey, Olivier.
They did their job.
Yes, they did.
So, guys, now that we have to concentrate on the next game, how do you look at the Ravens' defense? I mean, are they improving? Are they getting hot at the right time? Or do you think they are banged up and what happened in Denver is going to take its toll on Sunday.
I think they're an average defense right now. And if you look at the numbers, the Patriots' defense is as good, if not better, in a lot of the categories.
Yeah, agreed, agreed.
I think they're similar.
The Ravens are terrible defensively.
I think they're similar.
But they find a way to you know, stake in games and hang around and
whatever. Yeah, I think
whatever.
What they have on defensively, their side is experience. Terrible. You know, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Nada, you know, Terrell Suggs. These guys have been there before.
And they have their personnel back.
Yeah. And one thing also is that they're not afraid to come to Foxborough. They think that they can win here. They are on a roll. Their momentum is they have the momentum, and they almost feel that they should have won last time. So they're going to be extremely motivated to come back and win this game. Now, how can they beat us? I think we're going to probably stop the run. Hopefully Ray Rice will stop it with Wilfork and so forth. Now they're going to try to probably, you know, throw deep balls and try to beat us over the air, right? So basically, how do we stop the Baldwins and the Smith of the Ravens at this point?
I think they're going to get their yards in the air, and I think you're going to see your typical bend but don't break offense. You know, I think you're right. I think they'll be pretty good against the run, but I think Flacco's going to get his yards.
Well, I think
just can't let the ones get over you.
The issue is going to be the combination. You're better set up for it, in my opinion, because you have Tlaib here now, and you have McCourty at safety.
Right.
McCourty got absolutely slaughtered by Flacco. If you remember, this was the game where he was just dropping back, throwing to a spot, and
right
saying,
down
McCourty,
the sideline.
You can't freaking cover.
Yep.
You're better set up this time because you have Tlaib, who you're obviously comfortable matching up with anybody, basically. You did it with Andre Johnson. If they want to match him up, but you now have McCourty's ability to stay deep, and I think that is something he's shown the ability to do, is not get beat deep, not get Raheem Moored. But the question is, if you're focusing so much of not getting beat deep, now Ray Rice is open.
Right.
Now Dennis Pitt is open.
That's what I said
so
earlier.
So it's the combination of things, and I'm not sure you just say, well, they're going to stop Ray Rice. I don't buy into that. I don't just assume they're going to stop Ray Rice. So it's a challenge.
Do you put Tlaib on Anquan Boldin, or do you put him on Smith?
Smith.
Oh, Smith.
Yeah.
God. But with help. You know how Bill said last week we didn't give him a lot of help? I'd be in the ballpark with my McCourty or my Gregory.
It's going to be a tough game, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a tough game.
No, yeah, Vegas doesn't.
Vegas disagrees with us. Vegas thinks it's going to be easy.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know, these guys remind me a little bit of the Giants run. You know, we thought they were dead, and then all of a sudden they awakened from their ashes, and they start winning on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very dangerous team that's also is very confident in Foxborough on the top of that. So I was cheering for the Ravens, and then in retrospect, I'm like, should I have preferred to see the Denver Broncos win? So we would have gone down in Mile High and hopefully win over there. So I'm kind of confused now as to, you know, what would have been best. Obviously, it's better for
this
us
is
to stay
better.
Home.
Doesn't matter anymore.
This is better.
Yeah. The game's here. Doesn't matter.
And yeah, I agree.
I don't want to hurt your feelings, but it didn't matter what you were rooting for anyway in the game. Because unlike Ray Lewis, I don't believe God or anybody rooting for a game decides it. Plays decide it.
Yeah, Baltimore's. But you're right, Olivier. Defensively, Baltimore.
Thanks for the call, Olivier.
They're hanging on. They're not very good defensively. They played awful defensively all season long. And let's face it, they didn't play great Sunday defensively. They played okay. I mean, they held Manning to 21 points. They played okay.
In 6-degree weather, that was tough. I mean, that was frigid weather.
I mean, I just think that, you know, like the week before against Indianapolis, they allowed a ton of yards, and they were tough in the red zone. You know, big secret. I think the red zone's going to be important because the Patriots are going to get there a lot.
Earlier. Paul believes red zone and third down will be a key in this game. He actually goes, no, I don't think third down will matter.
I don't think Baltimore will stop him on third down. It's just a matter of stopping him in the red zone on third down.
It is going to be cold, apparently, for the game. Talking about it's not going to be 50-something like
last
week.
I heard 47.
Yeah. Well, no, that's during the day. 20s. It's going to get down to 15.
Yeah, I heard low 20s.
So at night.
Yeah, at night. Well, the game doesn't start till 6:30.
That's true.
Yeah,
no, I think this is going to be a 20s game.
Yeah.
Casey O'Connell will be able to write that as the temperatures drop.
You know what I just got?
Patriots heat up.
I just got another Kevin Wintered.
What?
Kevin Winter check. New flash guy in EEI. He said the forecast for Sunday right now, it's a long way out, but 47 degrees, partly cloudy.
Yeah.
So,
It's going to drop.
Noontime
temps
are
irrelevant.
That's why
I thought it was going to be 47.
Let's go to Al in New Jersey on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Al.
Hey, guys, how you doing? You know, I stood home last week. You know, I had to, I'm a mailman, so I had to come to work this week. I figured I'd stay home this week, but I'm not sure whether I had anything to do with the Pats winning last week. You know, I feel more comfortable with this game than I did against the Houston game. I think the Ravens are an old team. I think Lewis is retiring because he's old, not because he's, you know, in his prime. And what Flacco is going to show up? I mean, he had a couple of deep balls that were caught, but he also missed a lot of passes that he should have completed.
Well, you better hope it's not the Flacco that showed up against you the last two times he played you, because he was very good the last two times.
And I thought he only missed one deep ball in that game. The second attempt that they went to, that they burned Champ Bailey on, he overthrew. Other than that, I thought he was balls on in that game, and I thought he had a ton of passes dropped on him. I thought he played great considering the conditions.
Well, when you look at last year's AFC title, he played a great game. But Brady, would he only throw for like less than 140 yards? So we know that's going to be better.
Why?
And they did hold Rice to 78 total yards last year. And I think their defense is a better defense than it was last year. And I think the Ravens' defense is worse.
I would probably agree with the two defensive assessments.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can argue that. I think the Ravens' defense is terrible.
Ravens' offense is significantly better. I think Flacco is better. Yeah, I think he's continued
to grow.
Not even
a comparison.
And Torrey Smith is a far better player this year than he was last year. So,
the point I'm making is Brady is most likely to have a better game, if you were to bet, than Flacco, because Flacco has never been called elite.
Well, if you go by the numbers, that's not true.
If you're going by who's a better player, then yeah. Well, yeah.
Right.
So Tom Brady is a better player than Joe Flacco.
But not if you go by the numbers.
But I don't know if that gives him a better chance to have a good game on Sunday than it does Flacco.
And if you're going to base it on numbers, Flacco's numbers have been better than Brady's in the last whatever it is, eight playoff games.
And as much as I disrespect the Ravens' defense, the fact of the matter is they have players that have played well against Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots don't have defensive players that have played well against the Ravens.
Sure. I agree with that. But when Flacco, if Flacco loses this game, then they're going to be doing what they usually do in Baltimore, and that's boo him. Now, you know,
it depends how.
Right. Is he going to lose it again because Lee Evans drops the ball and the kicker misses the kick?
Let's make this for a hypothetical. Let's say that 70-yard bomb at the end of the game just falls harmlessly incomplete, and the Broncos win 35-28. Are they booing the crap out of Flacco in Baltimore? I don't think so.
If he loses, I think they will boo him.
You think if they lost the game, like I just said, 35-28 in his last-minute touchdown pass doesn't happen.
In other words,
that's
Flacco
on Flacco.
Has a good game,
Flacco played
anyway.
Great. Yeah. I don't think that would have been Flacco's fault if they had lost 35-28.
Right. Okay, I understand that point. You know, I want to make another point about the who was the Raven who tweeted out that about the Pats?
Brendan Abadejo.
Yeah, well,
I am Abadejo.
Yeah, I give the Raven fans a lot of credit because I go on that forum, and those fans were ripping him as far as keep your mouth shut, what are you trying to do, don't give them more fuel. And it just shows you how fans do have respect for the Patriots, because the Patriots don't play that kind of game.
I'm not even sure it's respect or fear. I think they fans have this fear of this Rodney Harrison-type rallying point and affecting them, because I saw the same thing. I went to a lot of those messages and all the news stories about it. At the bottom, the comments were always, why this guy have to open his trap, or what's he doing? Keep your mouth shut. Don't poke the beast. And yeah, they definitely fear the Patriots.
Just not smart.
Yeah, you're correct in saying that, because that's what I did get out of it. They were like, you know, don't rile them up.
Yep.
You know, I never talked to you guys about last year's game, because if the Pats win, and I do expect them to win, then everyone can shut up about that game. Because all you ever hear, and I never talked to you, I only started recently listening to you, but I always defended the Pats with last year's game. They won the game, no matter how well Flacco played. And when people talk about Evans dropping that ball, this is what I've always said. There are three parts of the play. You got to catch the ball, you got to secure the ball, you have to have 2 feet in. He caught the ball, and Sterling Moore knocked it out. It was a great play to me.
So what is this week? So what does a win Sunday have to do with that game?
Well, I think what happens is people will not look at that game and say, well, it should have been. They could say it, but this game is going to overshadow that.
Al, Ravens, however you think of that game,
right,
or however I think of that game, shouldn't matter at all what happens Sunday. If the Ravens come in here and blow them out, I don't think any differently of what happened last year. Now, if the Patriots blow them out, I don't think any differently of what happened last year.
Well, I think
Ravens should have won the game last year, and I'll think that if the Patriots win 58-0 on Sunday.
I think the Pats should have won the Super Bowl.
I do too. But they didn't.
So what are you going to do? You know,
if the Patriots play the Giants in 2 years and win, will that make you feel better about those Super Bowls? That's what I don't get.
No. I don't look at it. To me, a loss is a loss. So when you lose, but on this end, when people say, and they constantly say it, well, Evans dropped the ball.
He did.
He dropped the ball. The ball was knocked out of his hand.
Should the ball have been caught?
But the ball, should the ball, the receiver
should the ball have been caught?
Sure. But,
yes.
But
that's all anybody says about that play.
But
drop,
no,
strip,
what
whatever you want to say. I see a lot of people credit Sterling Moore with the strip on that play.
So what are you saying, Al, that people are making too much of the fact that, you know, Baltimore was and is still the better team? Is that basically what you're saying?
And if you're saying that, they wouldn't be 10-point underdogs.
Right.
That's my point.
I'm not disagreeing. What I'm really saying is the perception, you know, perception is not reality. The Ravens lost that game. A loss is a loss. But anytime you talk, the words are, they should have won that game. Well, they didn't win it. They lost it. When you talk about the Pats losing the Super Bowl last year, you don't say they should have won it. I say,
of course you do.
Well, I think
if you're a Patriots fan, you do. I do.
Yeah, I think that when people say that, it's not to say to question the result of the game. It's to determine how each team are against each other.
I mean, how many times have you heard if Wes Welker catches that pass, they win the Super Bowl?
Right.
And they're 100% right.
I still think that
there's
the
nothing wrong with that.
Are a better team than the Giants in 2011, but they lost the game. But I still think they should have won it.
I think they should have won the game. I'm not making any grandiose. Like, I don't think the Ravens were a better team than the Patriots in 2011. I think they should have won that game.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not making any grandiose statements about the Patriots and Giants, but I think the Patriots should have won the Super Bowl.
See, guys, my personality, I'm used to arguing with people who are coming down on the Pats all the time.
Right.
So,
that makes it different.
Well, that's
that makes
Paul.
It, that makes it different, though. It does. I know what Al's talking about, because when you're not with like-minded people, you feel like you're constantly validating your side.
Right.
Yes, and that's what I constantly do, because all I've ever heard was the Ravens should have won that game. And I'm like, wait, they lost. Next to a loss is never a should have won the game. Now, I think in the Ravens' eyes, they look at what they should have, even though it means nothing. If they blow the Pats out, that game has nothing to do with this game. But the point that I was trying to make is, on my end, the stations that I call, I don't have to hear them say, well, the Ravens should have won. Well, you know what? They lost last year. They're going to lose this year. So you're going to make the same excuse for losing this year. A loss is a loss. No matter how you – if a field goal is missed Sunday by the Ravens, are we going to say that the Ravens should have won that game?
Well, if it's another 30-yarder and it would have won the game, I'm going to say yeah.
When Giants fans won the Super Bowl back in, what was it, 25?
And you don't think Buffalo Bills fans think they should have won that game?
Of course, but I never hear –
Of course you do.
I never hear Giants say, oh, we should have lost that game.
Oh, no, Giants fans don't say it.
But,
no,
but, again,
but everybody else does.
Right.
If you're not a Giants fan, the Bills dominated that game.
See, when I call you guys, I have to understand that you're on my side.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You have to look at it. I mean, as a Patriots fan, you don't look at it that way. But you have to see why everybody else would look at it that way.
Right. Now, you know, I have one more question I want to ask you. With Gronk going out, what do you think? Do they have anybody else to bring in? What do you think is going to happen? Because, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a big loss with the Raven game, but if they were to go into the Super Bowl, I think it would have a bigger effect.
Well, look, I think that, you know, and thanks for the call, Al.
Yeah,
good stuff, Al.
I think that, you know, with Gronk going out, you don't replace him man-to-man. It's not like there's another guy that's going to come in and do what Gronk did, even if it's at a lesser level. You know, now you have a combination of guys. You know, who man's going to come in and do some things, and, you know, maybe Fells will finally play again. I don't know. But, you know, Hernandez is going to have to step up. And so, you know, Patriots are fortunate that they have other things to turn to. But you're not going to just replace him. And I say the same thing with Welker. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, the Patriots, you know, Edelman can just replace Welker. No, he can't. You know, he can do some of the things that Welker can do, but I think Welker's very unique. And I think you don't replace a guy like that man-to-man. You replace his production in other ways.
And they have
right.
a variety of sort of untapped resources.
Right.
You know, Deion Branch is a non-factor. But Deion Branch is a proven veteran guy for Brady in the postseason. It's not like you're bringing up Kamar Aiken and just expecting Kamar Aiken to play a role on the offense. Daniel Fells has been here a long time, has an established NFL career. You know, there's a reason to believe he's worthy of filling a void. You know, 10% of Gronk, and Branch gets 20% of Gronk, and, you know, Hernandez has to lift his game to get a little extra 10%. You know, it'll be all pieced together, but it's not like you're throwing somebody at the wolves and
right.
just saying, Gronk's down. We need somebody to step up.
Right.
You have reason
yeah.
to believe the people that are going to be out there can contribute. If
yeah.
anything, you've added people. Yeah, I saw that goal. It was phenomenal.
Did he do it on purpose?
Oh, yeah. He
That's
deked him and just let the puck keep drifting into the net.
And he's watching highlights on TV.
And the other aspect is, I mean, you even have the running backs. Now, Shane Vereen, I think everybody feels more confident in. And if Danny Woodhead could have and can come back, those guys are pass catchers in spread sets if you want to do some things.
Yeah.
The biggest thing you'll lose is the versatility of the player. The fact that when he's out there, he can be the best blocker on the field or the best pass catcher on the field.
It makes him a little bit more unpredictable when
right.
he's out there.
It's a
Correct.
Huge loss.
And I was 100% wrong. I need to get that up. You know how I said it was mental and he was hiding the arm because
right.
it was mental and he wasn't used to using it? Clearly, he was hiding it because he didn't want it to get broken again.
Right.
Because he did the same exact thing this week on one of the very first snaps of the game. He was running off the line of scrimmage. The linebacker was about to bump him. And while striding normally with his left arm up, he put it behind his back to avoid all contact. That tells me he knew that that thing was a weakness.
And Andy
he was
declared
hiding
it,
the weakness.
Andy declared himself wrong before he got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Because
when
of
I
that
saw
play
that play
that he just described.
I was dead wrong. He was hurt.
All right. A couple more calls. We got a ton of emails, and I really do want to get to them today. Let's go to Alvin in Texas. Alvin, make it quick because we're going to take a break soon to eat.
So you want me to do the hurry up offense?
Hurry up offense.
Preamble the Jays, and I was wondering, like, are we gonna fix that special team? Man, it was terrible last week. How we almost gave that touchdown. That's the thing that I was disappointed.
All right, preamble the Jays, special teams. We talked about that. Hopefully, it's just a one-time thing.
My guess is Bill was happy with it. He'll just go. He'll go about his business.
But certainly, that's something that Scott O'Brien will be tasked with correcting.
Yeah,
this
and
week.
You got a dangerous guy, by the way, in Jacoby Jones, who was I believe the All-Pro returner.
Yep.
For the season. He's a guy who handles both kicks and punts. Also can be a little loose with the football at times, so you might want to keep an eye on that. Maybe they get a turnover.
Grimy Skiz is in Miami. Hey, Grimy Skiz.
Hey, guys. What's up? I read reports that the game plan was surrounded with Danny Woodhead and Gronkowski. Now, if Woodhead didn't get hurt, do you think he'd have the same impact that Shane Vereen had?
No.
I don't.
No, they would have run different plays with him. I don't think he makes that over-the-shoulder catch.
I think that the game plan was probably similar, but I don't think that Woodhead is capable of making the kinds of dynamic plays that Vereen did. And it's one of those things that ended up being a blessing in disguise because I thought you got an unbelievable performance from Vereen. It's the kind of stuff that Andy and I know that we get criticized a lot for what is perceived to be an anti-Woodhead take, but I really like the way they've used Woodhead recently in smaller doses, but he's just so much more dynamic. Vereen is so much more dynamic, and I think that what you saw was a little bit of a coming-out party, and it was more pro-Vereen, and I know Andy feels the same way. He's eating now, so I'll speak for him. It's more pro-Vereen than it is anti-Woodhead, and I know some people give us some static about that, but I thought that some of the plays that we saw, especially the one Fred mentioned, the over-the-shoulder catch, that's what we're talking about with Shane Vereen. We see that kind of potential with him.
So did that game just steal Danny Woodhead's fate next year? Like,
no,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why you can't have both.
Yeah, they had
all
both
right,
this
guys.
Year. Why can't they have both next year? All right.
You know, it might. You know, Jeff Demps could be part of that next year too. We'll see. I don't think it seals his fate though.
All right. Thanks, Grimy Skiz. And one more call before we go to break. Eric is in Vegas. Hey, Eric.
Hey guys, long time listener and first time caller. How y'all doing?
Great. Thank
Welcome
you.
Aboard.
Thank you, guys. I got to say, your 2 hours are probably my favorite in terms of jumping out of the stresses of life and enjoying some amazing football that we were really privileged to have week in and week out when the season starts and usually ends in the Super Bowl or thereabouts. us as New England fans. So,
well, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, keep it real.
thank you.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. I was in sportsbook, and I'm not much of a bettor, really, but, you know, I was out there, and I love to people watch at places like that. And anyways, I'll make it a short story here, but I was watching the, you know, the Falcons, you know, pull out a miracle there at the end. They were trying to give that game away, and I'm sitting there, and there's a guy next to me who probably had a lot of dough in the money, you know, money in the game, and at the end there. And he just totally dejected. And I turned to the guy and I said, never give up, brother. They can pull this game out still. And a couple of people turned their heads. And, you know, everybody in that room, you know, a couple hundred people, I'm sure nobody was believing that, you know, they were going to pull that game out. And so anyways, they did. And I went over to those few people who were shocked. And I told them, that's what, you know, just ask Teddy Bruschi about never giving up. And the reason I bring that up really is because I think it's one of the lesser talked about elements of what makes Patriots so great. You know, Tom's got it. Teddy, be one of the probably one of the most transcendent heroes, you know, of recent years, certainly for, you know, blue collar fans and all the rest of the fans, you know, he's truly an icon for us. And I'm outside of New England now, about 15 years, but out here in Vegas. But, you know, I think that's one of the lesser appreciated elements of what makes Patriots so great. And I was wondering if you could talk about a little bit about that. And I'm going to tie it in with a scenario which seems most likely, was we basically have two really tough defenses to put a ring back on our finger here coming up the next few weeks. With the Ravens, and then most likely with San Francisco. And so really you're talking a battle of wills to move the football, it always is. But say, you know, with the Ravens this week, and I'll jump off the call here, you know, that we struggle in the beginning. And, you know, we're, you know, obviously I know we're mentally tough enough, but say that, you know, we struggle, and then we pull it out. The and the Ravens think they got some momentum and so forth, and then we come back and have a, you know, a 10-point lead or something like that, you know, at the end of the half, and then we get into the third quarter, and now we're up by 17, maybe 21, something like that. So the Ravens are, you know, up against it. And do you think that they have the fortitude, both physically and mentally, to pull a game out like that? And then if it was a similar scenario, because I think the Ravens have a better mental toughness than San Francisco does. And maybe you guys can talk a little bit about such a such an ability to handle that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Thanks for the call, Eric. I think, here's what I think. The reason why the Ravens wouldn't come back from that 17-point lead is because the Patriots aren't going to take the metal, you know, the foot off the pedal like some other teams might.
No, and, but I think his point is just getting to the core, you know, sort of the Matt Schaub. We don't think Matt Schaub has it. I think the Ravens have it.
Oh, I think they have
As a team, I think their coach, I think their quarterback, I think they believe, whether they're too dumb to not believe, because I don't think Joe Flacco's the best. I don't think John Harbaugh's the best. But I think they believe. I think they have that fire, that will that Eric was talking about. And so I think both teams have it. I think the Patriots definitely have it. You know, Belichick and Brady, I mean, Belichick literally would have to be dead before he gives up at anything. Same with Brady. Now, if you're playing ping pong and you're up whatever, he's going to have to be dead before he loses. And I think that it's kind of what the Texans lack. And, you know, I think that does automatically just sort of seep and spread into a team. And it also doesn't if it doesn't come from the right place. So to me, the Ravens are as willful as anybody. I don't know if they're good enough to beat the Patriots, but they're as full of will as anybody.
Yeah, and I think the Patriots know that and are wary of that. And, you know, you talk about Patriots 60 minutes. There's no way they're going to ever let up against the Ravens, you know.
No, but I agree with the way Andy said it. I don't like either team's chances if they fall behind by 17. I mean, it's just common sense.
Especially in the postseason.
But I would not eliminate Baltimore's chances. I would not eliminate San Francisco's chances if they fell behind by 17.
Atlanta?
Because they have some Atlanta, so you might as well just go home then. It'd be glorified garbage time whenever that happens to take place. The Patriots, if they fell behind by 17 to anybody, would not fold up the tent and go home. That's not how they're wired. Now, there's a lot. Houston, yeah, absolutely. The game was over.
Now, the one difference, I would say, Eric said he thinks they have to go through two tough defenses. To me, putting San Francisco and Baltimore in the same any sentence there is,
right.
Whoa, no.
Yeah.
San Francisco, totally different beast from Baltimore. Baltimore has the will. They have some players, but none of their players at any one position are as good as any of the 49ers. Yeah, just totally different beasts.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, all emails. We got a ton of them, and we'll get to them right after this.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds are 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. PFW in Progress presents Car Shopping with Fred Kirsch.
You know, when I first got married, my wife's car, she had a Subaru Outback, okay? The woman across the street comes over and says, oh, you have a Subaru Outback. That's a lesbian car. And I'm up pruning the tree. I'm like, who asked you?
Never question the boss when it comes to cars.
Did you say that?
Yeah, I said that to her. Who asked you? But my point is, who cares? If lesbians have adopted the Subaru Outback, but I like a Subaru Outback, I don't care.
Because there's
only people like you that have hang-ups.
No.
Did you listen? I have a hang-up.
Nobody will ever tell Fred Kirsch or his wife what to drive. Now back to PFW in Progress.
All right, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline, web radio at Patriots.com. We're going to get to some emails now. We got a ton coming in. I got 2 pages of emails coming in.
Before you do that, real quick, I just need to say a couple thank yous. First of all, thank you to you for your donation to my marathon
efforts. Oh, you're welcome. Did you get my comment?
I did. Yeah. I also need to thank Eric Van Deven, our friend Warren Ladd, Dagmar.
In
I don't
Miami.
Know how to say
his
name. Arensabia. And James Beegin in, I believe he's Australia. So I need to thank the PFW listeners that are coming through on the fundraising effort for me. I appreciate it very much.
I actually took an insurance policy out on you and named myself the beneficiary. So. web radio at Patriots.com is the email address. Jonah writes in, hey, guys, love the show. I live out here in Washington, and seeing Seattle choke last minute against Atlanta was just as good as seeing the Patriots whoop on those tomato cans. Anyway, just wanting to see if anyone's heard from that loudmouth Richard Sherr woman. Think he's mad, bro? Keep up the great work. Yeah, that was nice to see him lose. He got into it a little bit during the game. But, you know, I got a feeling that if he was on our team, we'd like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is a punk, but he's a pretty good player. Let's see. We got it.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that if he was on my team, I'd still not like him. I think he is a punk. I think you're right.
Really?
I mean, he's a good player. I'm not taking that away from him. He can play. But I could do without some of the antics.
Phil in Nova Scotia, I think Orr is the open door to Flacco, Michael Orr. Even though he's on the 2020 side of Flacco now, Orr is a hothead, a sulk, and lazy. I would love to have Spikes get inside his head with all this chatter and silly dances. Speaking of which, you guys care to give a score to Spikes' dance on the fumble negated by the rolling to a stop forward progress?
I got
to
be honest with you. That's the only play I noticed him the whole game.
Yeah, he was pretty quiet. I thought all the linebackers were except for Mayo. I thought Hightower, I think he had one good play. But
Hightower at least flashed a play or two.
Yeah.
I didn't really notice. Evidently, maybe we should talk a little bit about that Ninkovich interception. Mayo had a lot to do with that, talking to him after the game. They did, you know, and Belichick mentioned in his post game that they were in a blitz on the outside and they made some adjustments, and Mayo was the one who made a check. And that sort of changed things, allowed Ninkovich to go inside, and then Rob dropped into coverage. Obviously, everybody saw what happened in the play. But both Ninkovich and Mayo admitted to it afterwards and said, oh, it's a play we probably can't use again now because you guys are all talking about it. But that was something that Mayo had seen. So even though physically that's not a big play by Mayo, that's a big play in the game.
Warren from the UK says, can Joe Big Throw Flacco actually throw the ball to his left? Every deep ball I recall him ever throwing is to his right. I was thinking, why didn't the Broncos roll the coverage to his right side on most throwing plays? I honestly can't think of a deep pass from him that is to his left. Also, how do you feel about Matty Ice finally getting a win in a potential opponent in the Super Bowl? I don't think the Falcons are going to get past the 49ers. I
think it's funny in how little, and Andy said it, you know, about the monkey. it's funny how little you can prove to me by winning a game. And if it was possible, I'm every bit as unimpressed with Atlanta as I was before the game. Yeah. In terms of Flacco, that's a big thing for him. A lot of people, I don't know if there's something to it. I can think, you know, I don't watch all Baltimore games, but the game that they played against the Patriots, he threw a bomb to Torrey Smith over Kyle Arrington to the left side early in that game. I don't know. Maybe that was just a fluke and a one-time thing. He did seem to throw all his deep balls were either in the middle of the field on Sunday, Saturday, or down the right sideline. So maybe there is something to it. I don't know.
Let's see. Juve writes in, says, great game on Sunday. It could have gone a little better. Talking about Gronk's injury and a couple other things. Now, let me tell you how I really feel. First, what is the deal with CBS not airing our national anthem when three other games were? They sure were ready to show the overrated circus that that went on in the Ravens pregame. What a joke. I do respect Lewis's accomplishments in the field, but off the field, I'll let you guys comment on that. During the game, I had mixed emotions on who to root for. I disliked the Ravens very much, but by them winning would give us a home game. Denver's defense stinks, and Manning choking would make it an easier game to win, I think, even on the road. Please ease my worries for this weekend. Also, my son Frank is 11 years old and plays tackle. Wanted to tell you guys that the Ninkovich pick looked like Gronk going across the middle for a catch. I hope you guys read this on air because I'm going to let him listen to it on the podcast later. And if you could, please play some of the Billy Madison bits that you have or Caddyshack. Thanks a lot and keep up the great work. Well, okay. So congratulations to your son for playing tackle football.
Yeah. Huge.
That's great.
We need some updates on that, by the way. Like we have from Tiff. Tiff gives us updates on her son and his football exploits. So I want updates. I disagree that Denver's defense stinks, by the way. I think Denver's defense is better than Baltimore's by a lot.
Kevin writes in. He's from London. One area of real concern seems to be getting brushed over. At least three Houston scores can be attributed to good field position generated by kick returns. Well, we didn't brush over it here. Maybe
that was brushed over elsewhere. Where exactly?
Yeah. Can you explain why New England's special teams performed so poorly against Houston's kickoff returns last night and how this will be addressed before the championship game?
Derek Martin will be active. Weren't both their goods? Wasn't Malcolm Williams inactive too?
I'm not sure. You think that had a lot to do with it?
Yeah, Martin and Williams, both inactive.
If you name two guys that are just on the roster for special teams, that's them, right? Now, I'm being a little overly simplistic here. That doesn't mean the guy that was in their stead shouldn't have, you know, stayed in his lane and made plays, but you might see those guys active next week or one of them active as they try to address an issue there.
There's a spot open, right?
Fernando's, this is his first time emailing the show. He says, am I the only one who's afraid of the Ravens? I think people are used to be in the spot and take it for granted that the Patriots will win. What do you guys think is more important, shutting down Torrey Smith or Anquan Boldin?
Torrey Smith.
Yeah, Smith is the guy that's going to hurt you long. Boldin he'll get his underneath passes. And he goes long to him, too. I kind of looked at that because I wanted to make
Boldin's
sure.
Boldin's terrific, yeah. But in terms of the big plays.
But Smith is faster, and you know he's really come into his own this year.
And yes, you are the only one who's afraid of the Ravens. Respect the Ravens. No need to fear them. What do you think?
I agree.
Andy's eating.
Let's see.
Well, Fred couldn't finish his chicken wing dinner. I mean, boneless buffalo wing dinner. Right, so I had some.
So Andy did.
And I luckily had the pockets left over that they give you with the salad, so I put a couple fingers in the pockets and made sandwiches.
John in New Brunswick.
Good thing I got the salad.
In the last few games, I was worried every time we went into a game as the presumptive Super Bowl champion. After the first blowout of Houston, we were told we would be the 2013 Super Bowl champions, only to be humbled by San Francisco. We have to approach every game with the same intensity and focus we did when the Houston came to town last month, not look beyond the next game. Now, that being said, I'm going to do a complete 180 and ask a serious question. If the Pats win the Super Bowl, where would the public celebration be held? Oh, boy. It would be held in Boston,
yeah,
down Boylston Street.
Duck boats.
Yep. So usually that's like 2 days after the game. like that Tuesday or something? Or
yeah. But, yeah, because we'll travel back on Monday.
But we don't get ahead of ourselves here, ever.
Since I'm going to the combine, I don't have not expected to go to that, am I?
Fitzwilliam in New Hampshire. Are the Ravens' weapons better than the Patriots? Bolden, Smith, and Jones versus Welker, Lloyd, and Branch. Pitta and Dixon versus Hernandez and Human. Rice and Pierce versus Ridley, Vereen, and Woody with a broken thumb. So are their weapons better?
There's another matchup there that wasn't mentioned. Didn't hear the Brady Flacco one.
Well, that's I would yeah.
No, their offensive weapons are good.
If Baltimore's offensive line plays well in this game, they are going to score points. Now, if the Patriots' offensive line plays well, the Patriots are going to score points too. I'm not saying that means they win. Baltimore's offense is good enough to score points against virtually anyone when it's right.
And if you leave plays on the field, you know that Welker play crossing that could have been a big play that he just flat out dropped. You know, that could have been, A, it could have blown the Texans out of the water. But if you don't make that play, I think you're going to kick yourselves against the Ravens and say, you know, that we got off the field there and all of a sudden they score. You know, things go sour if you don't make those types of plays.
Yeah, and listen, there's something missing with that offense in Baltimore. I've been telling you guys this all year about Flacco and the whole, they look like they have the makings of a team that could score the kind of points the Patriots score. But they don't. They don't even come close. They're a good offense, but they're not a great offense. And I think what was holding them back was periodic pressure that they would get from the offensive line. And I think that in the playoffs, at least, there hasn't been very much of that. And they've faced some good pass rushers with Mathis and Freeney and then Miller and Dumervil.
I also think they lack the Brady-Welker connection, that kind of every time we need that short third down, the quick little receiver's going to get – because Bolden's their possession guy.
He goes too much.
But he's not quick.
But Rice catches a lot of passes.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. But to me
– Big part of this game. Andy's right with that. I agree.
I think that quick – excuse me.
That's why I jumped in. At first, I thought you were going to have one of those coughing fits.
That quick – you know, the I don't think Flacco is an overly quick quarterback in terms of anything he does, really. I don't think he digests defense as quick as Brady does. I don't think his release is as quick as Brady. He's more of a big thrower, a big, tall passer who can throw the ball down the field. You know, there's not a lot of guys that can make the throw that he made against Denver to win the to not lose the game like they did. And I think that's an impressive play, but his strength is not like Brady. You know, it's third and six, and I got Welker, jitterbug, first down, because Bolden should be, I guess, theoretically that guy, but isn't.
And one of the things, you know, even if you look at how great he's played in the playoffs, he's still completing barely over 52% of his throws in the two postseason games. Now, part of that, and something that Andy always makes fun of me about because I'm a Flacco apologist, but part of that is the design of their offense. They take a lot of shots, and you're not going to complete a high percentage of those. But at the same time, what Andy's saying about him not being as quick as Brady, I think that when you're not as quick to say, I need to go underneath to Rice here, and then all of a sudden you see him, I think you're quickly throwing it, and sometimes you're not as accurate as you might. He had a great, a big play, which should have been the last possession for Baltimore. They got the ball to about the 25-yard line for Denver, I think, down a touchdown. They had third and five. He threw a pass. He looked around. He couldn't find anybody. And finally you saw Jacoby Jones sort of squirting across, and he threw it, and Jones just flat out dropped it. But you watch the replay, and the throw was behind him. Now, it absolutely should be caught 100 times out of 100. But he put it back. You know, you're running one way, you reach back. He got both hands on it. Any NFL receiver should catch it. But it wasn't an accurate throw. And then on fourth down, they ended up getting the stop. Michael Adams, I think, knocked the pass down with a beautiful defensive play. But that third down throw, Brady doesn't miss that. Brady doesn't put it in a position where the guy can drop it. And I think that is one of those things. It's because I don't think Flacco is as quick. I think Andy's point is dead on with that. And I don't think they have enough to keep the chains moving and the clock moving. And that's why the defense has been on the field so much. They've scored a lot of points. They scored 24 and 38 points in their two playoff games and barely had the ball. They were badly outpossessed in both games, for lack of a better term. The other team had the ball for 87 plays in both games against them.
Jason in Barcelona, how concerned are you about Gronk's injury in terms of next season and into the future? Considering he was cleared to play in the regular season finale, he seemed to break it rather easily on Sunday. Can you give any specifics to the injury? My understanding, when surgery is performed on a broken bone, it means quicker healing time and stability because of plates and screws. This was reported as a re-break, which makes me worry. Might he have some healing problems such as Sam Bowie
with his broken bones, they took a long time and never fully healed.
Yes.
I'm concerned.
I mean, isn't the multiple injuries in one area, to me, is concerning. Whatever it is, RG3, another knee injury, that's concerning. Because even if you recover the first time, okay, now you have to recover again. And if you lost 3% of whatever, blood flow, arthritis, whatever specific to the area, and you do it, it's getting worse every time. And while it's a re-break, reports also have indicated that it was right after, like, the plate. It actually broke in a different spot.
In a different spot,
so
yeah.
I think the plate held the original break together, and it broke. Now, I don't have any idea what that means. I don't know how big the plate is.
Right.
I don't know how far away you're talking. I don't know how concerning that is. Did he not drink his milk? Is he a guy that has weak bones?
Yeah, that's what my first thing was. Okay, if that's the case, if that report was true and it happened, like, outside of where that brace was or the plate was, does he have, like, some type of, you know, like when your windshield cracks and it
right.
starts to spread?
Right.
Did it spread? You
that
know?
Could happen.
Right.
Yeah. I have concerns. The beast that was Rob Gronkowski is showing, you know, a little weakness here, and that concerns
and
me.
I think the way he – this is more anecdotal. This is something Andy and I go back to the draft because we both love – I mean, nothing compares. I don't even want to put myself in the category of how much love and adoration Andy
had. You make it sound very gay.
For Gronk. No, but we both really liked him a lot. I was really concerned, and you remember you used to make fun of me for this a lot. I was really concerned because back injuries always, you know, they scare me. And now you had a major back injury that cost him a whole college season. Then he was able. He played. We see how he plays. There's no
timidness.
You know, there's no like, you know, easing your way back into playing the role of Rob Gronkowski. He does everything violently, and we see a bad ankle injury that cost him a Super Bowl, and now we see a broken arm that is either rebroken or broken in a different place, which I think would be even worse. If that, you know, and I didn't even really think of that. That's why I said that's interesting when you made that comment about the plate maybe protected the original
right.
break. I think that would be even worse.
Well, now I think you have to go down the road of Terrence Wheatley and get some sort of a rod. Remember, he
yeah.
had rods in his arms?
Right.
Maybe so you need a rod to protect
the whole.
You're
looking at a span of maybe 5 years.
Rod.
Three major injuries. Because can we agree that if that injury to the ankle happened in the middle of the season that he would have missed probably 4 to 6 weeks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
I mean, he played in that Super Bowl only because of the desperation of the situation.
Correct.
Right.
He probably so. I think in the span of about 5 years, he's had three major injuries.
Right,
and that concerns me. I just don't know how
Not
long
surprising.
You can be. No, the way he plays, that's my point. Is I don't know how long you can be Rob Gronkowski playing like.
Well,
that.
I have to give it to
it's
Andy
like Patrick Chung.
I yelled at him. Was it last year when you said the way he plays, you have to worry about injury?
Yeah, but I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But
he
as
blocked
usual,
on a PAT and he dove out of bounds and made a catch
that's
and broke
true.
His arm twice.
That's true.
These weren't pot shots. The thing I was talking
about.
The
wear and tear.
Remember the hit to the back he took early in the year? Somebody was holding him up and he took a huge blow to the back.
Yeah.
And he came up like gingerly.
Right.
Those are what I was talking about. This. They're two freak broken arms.
He's such a
big
target, and he doesn't
off and
really
are,
move
Andy.
That fast.
There was no violence on these two
but
arms.
But you know what I'm
breaks.
Saying? Like the actual injury, when it happens, often is an innocent-looking
right.
thing.
Well, it's
but
like I always
think,
talk about the people that end up paralyzed. It's not the big hits. It's like the two pass rushers who like barely like they tap in the and they just hit that right angle,
right.
and one of them goes down.
Yeah. Jason in Maine, what do you guys think of the lack of aggression by the offense in the end of the half situation in the game Sunday? The three and out at the end of the second quarter seemed like they were just trying to run out the clock, and it allowed the Texans to get three more points.
I wish they did run out the clock. They threw the ball twice.
Then at the fourth quarter, two-minute warning, they took a knee instead of trying to just end the game with a first down. I think the offense needs to be more aggressive against the Ravens to prevent the potential of the game coming down to the last few seconds.
I didn't really understand the kneel down at the end of the game. And again, I'll get back to Bill told us a month and a half ago the easiest way to lose a game is to get a field goal blocked, to get a kick blocked. And now suddenly we're playing for kicks when we have a two-score lead. I didn't get that. The end of the half, my problem with that was I don't think that they could figure out what they wanted to do. They didn't call timeout on defense, which I thought was an error. I want to say the last play before the two-minute warning, the first play coming out of the two-minute warning, they had a chance to call timeout. And they didn't. And then the Texans ended up scoring. Then you get the ball back. You run on first down. You huddle. So you're clearly in no rush. Then you throw the ball on second and third down incomplete. That didn't make any sense to me. So Houston ends up getting the ball back with 24 seconds left and, more importantly, two timeouts. And cost you 3 points.
VIP Stripper says the SI jinx. Flacco was on Sports Illustrated. Said there's two covers. Niners get the West region, and Flacco is in the East region. Okay.
So just to reiterate, I do have the game book in front of me. The first play coming out of the timeout was second and goal from the five. Foster ran 4 yards. I thought you should have called timeout. I said it to you right at the time. Why are we not calling timeout here? Right, Andy? And so now the next play gets run with 1:20 left. It could have potentially been run with 1:50 left. If you call timeout, probably right. more. Probably right. more like 1:55.
Right.
But anyway, you don't call timeout, so there's 1:20 left. Foster goes in for the touchdown. So now you get the ball back with 1:09 left after the kickoff, when it could have been about 1:40.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if they had called timeout.
Yep.
And now you can go into a regular 2-minute drive. You get plenty of time. You get your time. You got probably still what, two timeouts? No, you had one. You would have one timeout, a minute, say conservatively, a minute 40, one timeout, plenty of time to go into it. Then they come out. They run Vereen for 4 yards. They don't hurry up. They go into a huddle. So clearly they're not really rushing. So it goes from 109 down to 40 seconds. They run the next play, incomplete. If you're not going to hurry up after that run, why are you throwing the ball?
Right. I get you.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, no, you're right. Lawrence writes in, Larry the Drunk, actually. Hey, guys, I just want to say that Andy made an excellent point at the start of the show that being there before means you can right mistakes and do it differently for a better outcome. The fact that this Super Bowl run is on the back of last year's is much more relevant to that point than to last year in 07. The fact is the 2011 squad was vastly different to 07, different faces and differently playing style. Last year, for the majority of players, you can try and hammer home to players how to go about it on the back of the 07 experience, but they weren't the guys in place. The fact that the majority of the squad felt that sting last year means that they can self-motivate themselves in the back of that. Because of that, I'm confident players won't let the situation get to their heads. They won't beat themselves. It's on Baltimore and hopefully Atlanta or San Francisco to beat us. I'm emotionally prepared for this. So basically saying that the Patriots aren't going to beat themselves. Okay. I mean, Baltimore's got the same thing, though. They had a bad loss, and now they're going to, you know, they felt that sting. So that's why another reason why it's probably going to be a dogfight.
Yeah, I kind of more, I don't know how you meant this, Andy, but I kind of more, when I was talking about the experience, I just meant kind of like organization-wise.
Well, yeah,
just like
kind of what I was talking
being
about.
Through it all, you know, even behind the scenes. The players are going to prepare themselves for the Super Bowl. I mean, there's times when new teams go to the Super Bowl and they don't really understand what that's like, and I don't think you see that all that often anymore. I think you see coaches now that have been part of it. The great quarterbacks now have been in big games before. I mean, certainly if it's Baltimore against San Francisco, those are two teams that haven't been in the Super Bowl, you know, in a while. It'll be an adjustment. But both of those coaches have been in big games. And I think they understand how to prepare. I don't really worry about the players in the Super Bowl experience anymore. I don't think the Patriots got caught up in a Super Bowl experience last year, for example. I think their mindset in 07, and Andy, you've been a big proponent of this, you know, the whole treating it as just another game and a business trip and all that stuff, whereas maybe they needed to get a little bit more jacked up and emotional about that game. But that's not necessarily not knowing how to play. I think they went out and played just the way they always play. And, you know, sometimes it's good enough and sometimes it's not.
Michael in Raleigh, North Carolina says, who cares what happens against the Ravens? The title of my email is a little misleading. I do want the Patriots to win, and of course I want them to go to and win the Super Bowl. However, I've reached the point where watching the Patriots with Brady and Belichick at the helm is a pleasure, whether they win or lose. We are watching the latter later portions, of what will go down as one of the best, if not the best, quarterback-coach combos in NFL history. Brady's command of the offense is unparalleled, as evidenced by his performance on Sunday. Seeing Belichick shrug and go back to defensive coaching after Brady threw a bomb to Vereen brought a smile to my face. I don't think it can get better than this, and all of us as New England Patriots fans should relish these games.
That was very funny when he looked up at the – he was coaching the defense, looked up at the big board, saw Vereen's touchdown, and then didn't miss a beat, just turning his head, no smile, no celebration, right back to talking defense with his boys.
Mo in Vermont says, what's up with the Ravens linebacker I am a dumb hoe, and his that's good. And his comments about the greatest offensive unit ever. I mean, the hurry up is based on doing it better and faster than your opponent.
No, no, no. That's not what he was talking about. He wasn't talking,
talking about the quick snap.
Yeah, he's talking about those. Manning does it. I mean, it's not just Brady. These heady quarterbacks who every once in a while think they get you moving, and they say,
yeah,
I'm going to run a quick snap here just because. It's not about hurry up offense, no huddle like that.
He says, I think it's as cheap as throwing deep to your fast guy four times on a drive. Hey, 18-1, that's his career stats, right? No, wait, his career playing time is 18.1 seconds.
So you said Kaepernick was on the cover of the regional one?
Well, he just said 49ers are there on the cover. Oh. I don't know if it's one person or not. Let's see, a lot of stuff here. Ian writes in, just want to let you know that for some reason the live feed doesn't play on a Galaxy 3 on Sprint. Well, it might be user error.
Of course. It's always user error. It's never our fault.
Lauren in Charleston, South Carolina, please deny tickets to Ravens fans. Ravens fans are rude and just plain nasty, so I would like to know if there's a way to shut Ravens fans out of purchasing tickets to the game. I do know that when purchasing tickets, you have to give your address, so when you enter the zip code and it's one from Baltimore, can we deny the purchase? I don't think we have to worry about that. There's not a lot of tickets left.
A lot of Ravens fans last year, though. Remember? There was a lot of Ravens fans here.
Yeah, I think there's
game.
A different I think there's a different feeling with this team. I get the feeling it faded a little last year, but coming off last year's Super Bowl loss, I feel like there's a little more passion in the fan base. And this is totally
for
just for me.
Or for Baltimore?
For us.
Oh, yeah.
For us.
Oh, Baltimore is the opposite.
For friends, for my own purposes.
I think people think this is a better team.
I do, too. I don't think people thought last year they were going to the Super Bowl, and it kind of was ho-hum.
I think they did. I think they all thought that Baltimore were going to beat Baltimore, but they weren't overly impressed with the Patriots. I agree with you.
No,
was,
I think
it was the road.
I think
the road
December,
to the,
yeah. January, nobody said, but I thought I need to get on board because this train's going to a Super
well,
Bowl.
Well, I think the whole thing
this
with
year,
Myra,
the train
with
has
Myra
got
Kraft at the end and the Baltimore wide left. I think people.
Well, the game had already happened then.
No, but I think people thought they were going to go to the Super Bowl, but only because of the weak road. Like Pittsburgh losing to Denver, and then you knew you were going to beat Denver.
Yeah.
And then Baltimore, you know, I think people thought that they were going to, you know, we always find a way to beat Baltimore. They ain't going to beat us. But I think that people feel better about this team than last year's team because the defense is better.
Ish.
Chester's in Portland, Oregon. Ish. Let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Chester.
Hey, fellas, what's going on? Hey, you know, that Sea Chicken's losing this week. The Icky Baluki days have finally come to a close up here. And, guys, tell you what, there's no greater laugh than the last one as a Pats fan. So, Mr. Sherman, thanks for opening that door for me. But it's been quite a nice couple days up here in the Northwest as a Pats guy. But just a quick points on this last game. You know, again, our coaching prep is just stellar against repeat opponents. It's been a question on my mind for a few weeks, but it's definitely putting some of my concerns at bay. You know, I'm concerned about Torrey Smith, and I'm sure we'll talk a little about that as the day, as the week progresses. But quick point on Vereen. Is this going to be our potential stretch the field option here? Because I think that may be our play if that, you know, is needed in the playbook. And, you know, what an effort to finish. You know, I wish we would have seen more of that over the course of this year. But, you know, in some ways, it's great to have a new facet for our opponent to think about. But, you know, really looking forward to hearing the talk develop on Baltimore this week, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. But, you know, final question for you. You know, we've been asking this before, but, you know, are we peaking at the right time? Because I feel like we are in a lot of ways. You know, defense showed me a lot, and, you know, barring injuries, I hope we keep this going. Take care, fellas.
All right, Chester and Portland, are we peaking at the right time, or are we peaking is the question.
They played very well on Sunday, yeah. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that represents peaking. Sure. They played a really, really good football game on Sunday.
Let's see. John in Winnipeg writes in, to start with, I always wondered why I like Paul's analysis so much.
I do, too.
And the other day, my 7-year-old daughter pointed it out.
This is going to be good.
While I was watching PFW TV, she said, that man looks like Grandpa.
There you go.
Unfortunately
for
Paul,
it.
My dad is in his 60s, but I do respect his analysis. Anyway, on to my question. The Patriots were the butt of many jokes this season about how many tight ends they were signing. With injuries to both Gronk and Hernandez, it proved smart. Someone who has surprised me with his versatility in play is Hooman. He was the guy I had never heard of before this season, yet he's taken snaps away from Fells, and his play probably helped eliminate Shenko's job on the roster. Is he signed for next year? Do you think they'll keep him, or do you think that depends on Ballard? Is it his versatility that has kept him on the game day roster over Fells, or is he just a better tight end at this stage of his career? And I look forward to enjoying Ray Lewis's retirement bash after Sunday's loss to the Patriots.
My guess is versatility. Gets him in the game plan over Fells. But, yeah, you know, I don't know. Maybe Fells just isn't that good.
Versatility leads to opportunity.
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. First of all, I don't really remember a lot of people making jokes. I mean, there's been sarcastic things like, oh, you know, just what they need, another tight end. But not like criticism of signing tight ends. Is it, you know what I mean? I don't think that's the same. You know, you might say, oh, geez, you know, I'm surprised Bill didn't take a tight end in the first round. That's, you know what I mean? You're being sarcastic, right, not necessarily critical of why do we have four or five tight ends on the roster.
Right.
But the other part of that is we wondered what happened, and Andy, you brought up Derek Martin and Malcolm Williams on the kickoff team coverage. Well, you got five tight ends on the team at times. Some of those guys got to go. So you can sit there and say, well, Gronkowski's out. Well, you haven't replaced Gronkowski. So you have another guy who's out there, and he's doing a fine job of filling in and doing a bunch of different things. But are you suffering in another area that maybe you're not taking into consideration? Personally, do you think they would have scored 41 points without Michael O.O. Manawanui on Sunday? Because I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't think that he had any bearing on the game plan in any way.
Well, this took a sharp turn to the ugly. For
no, but like, I think,
like him. He's really grown on me. Every time I talk to him, he's just a really nice, happy to be here. Like, my
I like him too, but you know what?
Looks pretty good right
now. My point is, I think the easy analysis is to say, last year they lost Gronkowski in the Super Bowl, and they had no options. Now they have options. Well, do they? With, you know, you still have Aaron Hernandez.
The difference now is they prepared for it. You know.
Well, they do some different things offensively, right, but it's not because of we have two and three tight ends waiting in the wings.
The best third tight end in football, Dan.
Well, I know that. Well, is he the best fourth now? Because he's, I mean, there's no doubt he's fourth,
no,
right?
No, I don't believe he is.
Well, I mean, he's inactive over the guy.
Who man's a fullback?
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
but you know what my point is? I think that you'd be if they ran the offense differently in the Super Bowl. You know, maybe you're right, Fred. Maybe they're just more prepared for it now. But I don't think they're more prepared because they have more tight ends on the roster.
They're going to do other things.
We should probably talk about Brian Daboll.
One last thing. P.S. John says, can you give Andy extra turns answering Ask PFW? He answers twice as many questions as Eric, and he isn't so pissy.
Eric is really pissy.
You answered a lot of questions?
I don't know. I try to do my job.
That's stunning. I answer everyone that I get that's actually a question.
Have you read, like, when we read him to put him in the paper, Fred, have you noticed how pissy he is? When asked PFW,
you
like
wouldn't believe how many times we clean stuff up too.
That he gives the reader, the people that ask.
Have you
questions.
Never noticed that, or are you just so tired at the
gives
time?
Gives them hard, yeah, a hard time, yeah.
Easy now. No, but I mean sometimes
he gives
like,
them hard.
When them you're reading hard. Those, that's usually the last thing we do when you want to get out of here. Right. Maybe you're not really paying attention, but he like says things so matter of factly and rudely,
and it's never like sometimes I get in trouble because people don't.
Well, do you read him on Twitter? He does the same thing.
Yes, but usually when I do that, I'm trying to bust balls. Like, I'm trying to take a shot at somebody jokingly. His just seems like he's trying to be a hard on.
You want to send? You want to send him in orbit? Ask him when the schedule comes out. Ask Escal when the schedule comes out. Twitter.
Whereas
followers.
Me,
the same as every year.
Did you see the guy?
As case every year, it's April. Well, around the draft.
But did you see? I tried to help that guy out last week when he asked. Because he was coming here in September, so I did a little research. How many back-to-back games? And if you could span a week, if you could be here for two Sundays, you had a good chance. And man, Eric would have said, now can we talk Daboll?
Sure.
Oh. That you cut your shot at Eric in?
Yeah.
Well, I actually took the shot at Eric.
No, but he wanted to make sure he read the PS, which was a shot at Eric, to stop doing SPFW. And if you continue to do it, stop being such a douche. Okay?
Right.
Brian Daboll's
that
back.
Was your editorialization.
Brian Daboll's back.
Right.
What does it mean?
I don't know.
I think, you know, again, we have no inside knowledge.
I do. He's going to be your offensive coordinator.
I think that, I think McDaniels is going to get a job at the end of the season.
I agree.
Yeah.
The only question is the job, the HC of the NEP or the HC of another team?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be.
That's not
Patriots.
His decision. It's not That's Robert Kraft's decision to make.
Well, even if, and be that as it may, Bill Belichick isn't going anywhere.
Or
maybe I'll ask Mr. Kraft when I'm at his house on Saturday night.
Yeah, there you go.
Good time for that?
Paul's going to Robert's house Saturday night to film a live all-access show.
Will you be in Robert's house?
Probably
or
not.
Or a tent.
Probably in
a
tent.
Serving drinks.
Yeah, I might have to bring my tuxedo shirt.
But like, it's a good coach who's a system coach that they're adding to the staff. That's where I put, because I'm not even sure they know what he's going to be in 2013. But he's a guy that's been in the system forever with Mangini and Pioli and Cronell. This is his system, and I know he's very tight with Josh. They're good friends.
Right.
I believe Josh came here because of Dable. I believe Dable was at Michigan State. Josh actually took a job at Michigan State, and then Dable said, do you want to just come here instead? There was another opening, something. I believe Dable and McDaniels are sort of tied together.
So McDaniels never actually coached at Michigan State?
I don't believe so. I believe he was like replacing Dable. I think Dable was like a GA kind of thing at Michigan State. Josh was going to replace him, and then there happened to be a job here, and for all I know, Bill said, Nick, is it okay if I take – because Saban was still there, right? That was under Saban.
In 99, he was listed as a grad assistant at Michigan State.
Who?
Josh.
Okay, maybe I was wrong. But I'm pretty sure he came – Dable and McDaniels
are
sort of tied together.
You're still right. I mean, Dable and McDaniels were at Michigan
State
together.
Pretty sure they're tied together, and that's why they're both
here. And that's
your
larger point.
And so – but it's a good voice. It's a good experience.
Sure.
I mean,
we were talking about Romeo Crennel coming back. Why not?
Right. You as know. Our assistant head coach defense.
But I think there's a possibility that this is more relevant than that, because I don't think Matt Patricia was going anywhere. I think the speculation that you guys just talked about with Josh is relevant. I think there's a chance that he could be getting a job.
Yep, I think so.
Or if Bill leaves, now you need a defensive coordinator, because essentially he's the defensive coordinator, so
Bill
now you need
ain't
Romeo.
Leaving.
How do you know? How can
I
you say
know he's going to be here
how
for a
How can you
long
say that so
time.
Definitively?
He's going to be here for
how
a long time.
How do you know Linda doesn't just say, Bill, you won the Super Bowl. Let's go to an island.
Anything can happen.
But thank you. Don't say it so definitively.
And I mean no disrespect to Jonathan, who said that.
Yeah.
But I don't think Jonathan knows.
I think there's a better chance of Brady retiring after this season than Belichick leaving.
I don't think there's any chance.
Right. Of either half.
No. Oh, I think there's a better chance Bill retires than Brady.
I think there's a chance of both
That's
of those happening,
point.
But I would
either
agree with Andy.
Will happen. What?
I agree with Andy. I think there's a better chance of Belichick, but I could see a scenario that both of them do. If they win the Super Bowl, I could see that happening. I would be surprised by it. Absolutely.
Drive off into the sunset on a duck boat together.
I'd be very surprised by it, but I don't dismiss it as out of hand.
But Fred dismisses everything.
No, well, you know, it's not his decision to
That's
make.
That's my favorite rant you've had recently.
It isn't.
But what if Robert gives him the decision?
He would never do that. He would never do that.
I agree with Fred on this one.
You
I just
throw
like,
around never.
I just like the way
not.
He does it, but I'm 100% behind him.
Why?
Because it's his team.
Why
and
would
he's
you let somebody else
Bill's
make a decision
leaving.
For you?
No, but... For all we know, Bill
I'm
has signed
sure
a lifetime contract
recommendation.
As a consultant. Maybe Bill is paid for the next 100 years as a consultant, and part of that is
that's
recommendations
yeah.
on head coach.
Okay. That would be a different
thing. You just said never.
We're all saying
no,
that
but that's
we
a
assume,
different thing.
Right. We're all saying we assume that when he leaves, he's gone. He's not going to be a GM. He's not going to be.
But he could be consultant.
You know, a special advisor.
I don't know the relationship those two have. We see very little of it. We see it occasionally on football.
Right.
For all I know,
I don't think
every year Robert's going to call him and get advice.
I don't think Bill wants to be tied down to a responsibility unless he's in charge.
Well, one of those consultant gigs are like.
But I'm sure he's going to get paid, and if he gets paid, he's going to be asked to do certain things.
He can consult from five rings.
Yeah, but you're adding something into the equation here.
What?
I think Fred and I are assuming that when Belichick retires, he's retiring. He's not going to be part of the Patriots.
Why are you
you're
assuming
saying,
that?
But you're adding something to the equation that we're not putting on the
right.
table right now. We're not saying
not
it's
my fault you didn't put it on the table.
But we're not saying it's impossible that he could be hired in some sort of consulting position. If he is, then he would have some say as to who the next coach is.
Maybe he already has been.
Fred
Maybe
and I are assuming that he retires and is not on the payroll anymore. I don't see why you would take his – I mean, certainly. Robert, you know, and I know you're looking for my replacement. I think Josh, you'd do really well with Josh. And Robert would say, well, I'm right along the same lines. I appreciate your input. He'll be part of our search.
How do we know it's not already in Josh's contract?
I'd be stunned by that.
I would be too.
Wow, you guys be stunned by a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Because I just think that he's not, he being Mr. Kraft, in the business of allowing others to make extremely important decisions.
No, but he clearly loves Bill's football acumen, IQ, everything. Even dating back to when he said he wanted to hire him the first time, but, you know, had to make a clean break and all that.
Yes,
he's been married to the idea of Bill Belichick is the guy for, you know, almost two decades now, right? Dating back to the early to mid-90s.
96.
So if he trusts him that much, I would think he would trust him to say
you believe
Josh
that,
is the guy.
I
you
think
believe
he would
every personnel decision that Bill has made Do I
what?
Do you believe that every personnel decision that Bill has made since he's been here has been the right one?
No, God no.
Okay,
but
you think Robert Kraft believes that?
No, but you do.
No.
Okay, so I'm not talking about me.
I was just trying to get
so
you.
So Robert
going.
Kraft knows. Look, I trust this guy to a point, but I know he's not infallible, and this is as important a decision where I have to be the one that makes it.
Has every decision Robert Kraft made since he bought the team been right?
That's okay, as long as – but
no, but my point is they both mess
up.
But he's going to make a mistake.
Exactly. You feel worse if you let someone else make your mistake.
Not if I believe the other person's an expert.
Well, I think Robert –
if I go to a doctor and I trust the doctor, I'm letting the doctor make the decision on some level.
Well,
still my body, and I'm going to be pissed if I die because I let somebody else kill me.
But you can't do it yourself. You need the doctor to do it. That's not the same thing.
Not necessarily.
Well,
they give you options.
You can't perform your own surgery.
You rely on other people's advice to a point. But at the end of the day,
Robert respects Bill a lot.
Truly, it's your
thing. I do too.
You have to make your own decision.
No, you don't have to. You can choose to allow an expert to make it for you.
Like Bill Walsh, suggested that Pete Carroll should be the head coach.
Right.
And
Robert Kraft suggested that Pete Carroll be the head coach.
And I'll bet you Robert Kraft, I should have done that one over.
No, I know. But if he, my point is, he believes Bill is the expert. He believes Bill knows it. Everything. Football, economics, salary cap, rosters. He trusts Bill in terms of football, correct?
I think he does, sure.
So unless he doesn't trust him personally and doesn't think Bill would honestly give him the best guy for the job, I think it's very logical to say, Bill, I trust you to make this decision.
But that's part of it.
You're dealing with Bill's advice to another human being. And every human being is different. Now, let's just say Bill does say, Josh is your guy. I know he can do it. You know, he can do those things. But now you're dealing with a different personality. So Robert Kraft has to have, a relationship with Josh McDaniels
as
a person. But not as a head coach yet. He's never had one as a head coach. And maybe he says, you know what, that's not the guy I want to be my head coach. There are other guys who can do it just as well. I'd rather have somebody maybe who I can, have a different type of relationship. I don't know. There could be a million reasons why, as a human being, he wants another guy. You know,
but
he might believe Bill when he says his acumen is good and he's this and that. But he might look at what he did in Denver and say,
But he knows Josh. That's the other aspect. If we're going to talk specifically about Josh, which is sort of two different things.
Well, let's say if Bill wants him to be, or if Bill suggests he should be the head coach, I would say he's got the inside track.
Robert knows.
Yeah.
And I have no problem if Robert says, I've been around Josh for a decade. I think he's a good coordinator. I don't think he has it to be a head coach. I'm fine if Robert wants to say that.
But
I'm not fine with just flat out saying,
oh, yeah,
Bill can't make this decision.
No,
absolutely.
No. I think, we're all on the same page now.
I think that Josh, if Bill likes him, has the inside track. No doubt about
that. Bill's recommendation, no.
Preparing for an AFC title game and
right.
We're replacing that.
But well, Bill is going to.
We do.
Yeah. If Bill recommends him, I think Bill's recommendation would go a long way to help Josh getting the job.
Yeah. And
the only way
to me he shouldn't get it is if Robert
just says, you know what, I just disagree.
Knows,
yes. I don't see it.
I've been around because he has to build a relationship
with
whoever
Fred's
the
saying,
person
though.
Is.
It's going to be Robert's decision. If he doesn't agree with that.
Or if he just wants Urban Meyer.
Yeah, he doesn't agree that Josh is the best guy for the job. He's not going to do it. You're not going to just give it to him because Bill said so.
But those people are
that's
saying that
Fred's
Bill is going to handpick his successor. That's wrong. That's wrong.
Not his
it's wrong.
Decision to
but
make.
I'm 1,000% on board with Fred on that. I don't see how you can do that from someone assuming that he's outside of the organization.
The only one
assuming
who's
he just retires, he does not have any more ties. How do you know what his motivation is?
You know what he's going to do? Bill has told Robert he has always wanted to be the PR director. He's going to become the PR director, and we're going to have to deal with him. On a
imagine TV how piece. Fast. You know what, Robert? Before I go. I just got to say one thing. You got to get rid of those two a-holes.
You son of a...
Really, Bill?
And then we'd become one of those special victims unit or whatever TV dramas because it's who had motive to kill the head coach?
No.
Oh, he just fired these guys.
I'd have to actually go in. I would cut out the middleman. I wouldn't wait for him to come to me. I would just say, listen, I understand. I had every motive. Here's where I was.
Here's the blood on my hands.
Let's see. There's a report that Larry the Drunk is saying from Pro Football Talk.
Larry the Drunk.
That the plate on Gronk's arm may have been the reason it broke.
Yeah, Michael Vega wrote that today in the
Gronk. Right, it put too much stress on the rest of the arm. I don't know. If that's the case, then I'm mad at my doctors for putting a a type of plate or brace in there that, you know, I'm pissed if I'm Robert Kraft. That's all I know.
Well, I'm pissed because my best player isn't playing.
There's questions that need to be answered inside the organization. We're never probably going to find out.
Right. Better hope not.
But there's some serious questions. You know, it's funny because I was talking about Tom Curran, our buddy, tweeted out earlier that, according to a source, the break had nothing to do with the arm not being ready to play. Now, if it's true that the Globe report today said that the plate caused the break this time, I don't see how the arm being – I think you're talking an unbelievable semantic game.
Right.
If you're saying it didn't have anything to do with it, because if the plate's not there and the plate caused the injury, if all of that is true, I don't see how something is missing,
right.
You know.
Right.
If the plate caused the injury, then the arm wasn't ready to play.
Right.
Because, without the plate, the injury doesn't happen.
Right. And if it did catch everyone by surprise, we didn't know that the plate would do that, then I'm still mad. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So.
Well, the other aspect is.
It was either a bad way to protect it or he wasn't ready.
The other aspect is he basically went down the same way, if not harder,
in the first game.
How would everybody have felt had he broken his arm again right on that play?
Right.
You know, what would have, you know, in terms of playing, not playing, was he cleared? Because remember, Friday morning, it was still a medical decision. Sunday afternoon, he was on the field. So very late in the process, he was, quote, cleared medically to play for that finale. So there's a lot going on here. Paul's right. We'll probably never know any of it, and I hope not, because the more we know, the uglier it'll get more like Andrews and Shanahan and RG3 and all that.
Well, that's scarily similar.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if this is Daniel Fells, he's not even thinking about playing him, you know? So that's where.
Well, and Fred,
it depends. Depends who you believe. If it's Daniel Fells, and let's pretend Daniel Fells is normally active, not a healthy scratch.
No, I know.
But if it's Daniel Fells and Dr. Gill says, you know, here are the five guys that were hurt this week, Fells, check. He's ready to go. He's cleared. Then he's playing. I mean, if you believe the process at the process, when the doctor clears him medically to play, he plays.
Yeah.
You don't. Bill has always said you can't be cautious and you can't be X, Y, and Z. You play him. Football players play football.
Freddie, what did you think yesterday? And Andy didn't have as big a problem with this as I did. Not that I had a huge problem with it, but Woodhead, he said, could have come back in the game. He came back to the sideline. He could have come back in the game. Then he said he'll have to be evaluated further. We'll see for next week to see if he can play next week.
Here's why I have no problem with that.
Bill said.
Stunned.
He could have come back in the game, but now we're going to get him on the practice field. Let's see what he can do, catching, blocking, whatever. We might have second thoughts about playing him this
week.
Okay,
so you didn't take the evaluation as to be medically evaluated. You took it as to be physically evaluated in terms of football.
Yeah.
I can buy that.
Yeah. So, you know, because – I've played sports with a broken finger.
No, but what I'm looking
at, I don't know what his thumb was.
I was looking at it strictly from the medical standpoint. Like they said, he can go. He's physically okay. He's well enough to go back in the game.
Yeah.
They didn't need him. They sat him out. Right. Now we'll see if he's well enough to go into the game next week. But you make a good point. You're probably talking about he's a running back. He's a skill guy. Has the ball in his hands. They didn't need him to go back in the game. Vereen was playing so well. We'll see how he plays with the ball in his hands during the course of the week at practice, if it affects him.
Right, that's how I took that.
That's a good point.
Another example why I'd be a terrible head coach. I probably would have said, you see Vereen? Woodhead might never play again.
Well, Wally, he just got Wally picked.
Right. Well, you're watching the game.
Well, the one thing that I didn't notice, and maybe I missed it, was blitz pickup. I don't know if Vereen is up there with Woodhead in that yet. And that could be a big deal this week.
I don't
week.
Think that's a very good part of Danny Woodhead's game overall.
Oh, I think he's gotten much better over the, you know, the course of the season.
Did he get him killed last week?
Yeah, I don't think he's – I mean, he's made some good blocks. I'm not saying he always gets killed, but I don't think that's a particular strength of his game.
Plus, he doesn't even think about it. He told me that on the TV interview, and I said, have you thought about throwing your body in front of J.J. Watt? No, I don't really think about individual players.
Paulie in L.A. says, AFC Championship, what grade do you guys give the DBs this past weekend? Defensive backs, Texans.
B.
I would say B.
B plus.
I mean, they get
that's
a strong
well.
Grade for do your job. I think they did the job that was assigned to them.
Yeah,
if
there
you
was
flat
no
out graded
breakdowns.
Them on covering them, it wasn't as good. But I think they did what they were asked to do.
Yeah, I don't think there were any egregious breakdowns. It didn't look like there was a lot of communication errors. They never went deep, so I can't even say that, you know, they did a good job taking the deep ball away. But, you know, at the same time, I thought there was guys open, particularly over the middle. You know, Johnson had 8 or 9 catches. Daniels had 8 or 9 catches. And they weren't all late.
But that's my point. I think if Bill had said the game plan is we got to stick with these guys. They're going to eat us alive. You have to be in their back pockets at all times. Then I don't think they covered well. I don't think Bill said that. I think Bill said, you got to be around them. You got to be a sure tackling. Don't let anybody get by you. That guy, you know what I mean?
He can't complete six in a row right. to get them down the field. So just make sure that he has to do that.
You know those things the players always say? If you listen to Bill, he tells you how the game's going to play out. And if you do what he asked you to do, more often than not, you'll be okay. I think they did that this week, and they were okay.
Jesse writes in and wants to have an update on Chandler Jones, who turned his ankle. Do we have any updates on Chandler Jones?
I don't.
We'll just have to see.
He was limping on the sideline because he came back to. He was on the field on the sideline with no helmet and had a noticeable limp, and that's unfortunate because I thought he started to look back to full health against the Dolphins.
He did not have a boot or crutches or anything at the end of the game, but he was limping. Yes, I heard. So. You know, we'll just have to see on Wednesday when that first report comes out.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm sure he's going to be limited in practice and questionable on Friday.
Well, maybe. I don't know. They didn't have any questionables last week.
Oh, we'll see.
Maybe he'll just be out.
One last question. Nick wants to know, what was the worst ref game for the Patriots this year? It was the Baltimore game that they won, of course. I hope that was a setup because it was very easy.
He spiked it. Even I would have to agree with that.
All right, that's going to be it for this edition of PFW Already? In Progress. We could go on forever, but we have things
now
to do.
Now we have to do a crappy TV show. Watch it Thursday.
There's no replay, right? There's no playbook.
No, there's Football Nation coming up next.
Football Nation at 2
coming
o'clock.
Up next.
With Bill and Todd.
All right,
Bill
so they're Todd. Moving up Taking to 2 because John Rook's on the road. So enjoy them, footballnation.com. We will be back tomorrow. See you then.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.